So you will tell them that for this new ruling they have all the environment. Try to get it down over there.
Thank you. You're not speaking today, are you? You speak as long as you want.
No. Don't tell her that. Luigi does not have the authority to say that.
Then I'll just take it off my time. Maybe.
No, right? You got the right idea. Take it off of your time.
Look at this guy. That's a conspiracy.
Well, I'm going to say I have to be like David
you
now.
You think I've spoken more than anybody?
Lengthwise?
Yeah.
That's probably lengthwise.
But
as far as frequency, I don't know about that. That'd be close.
We have to review the tape.
That's what you want to do, right?
Yeah. I think in both.
It's on.
Is it all bad?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Well, but then I'm trying to justify the things I'm saying in the background.
Hard to turn off.
Yeah.
You want to leave it off?
Thank you.
Yes, I was looking.
She has to get some.
Supervisor Tom?
Here.
Schmidt?
Here.
From OS?
Present.
Scherzer?
Here.
Lipscomb?
Here.
Alexander?
Present.
Stamper?
I'm here.
Cullen?
Here.
Mr. Chair?
Here.
We have 9 members present for you.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me in the back? No? Yes? First Amendment, please.
We'll be working on the Sheriff's Department on Amendment 1A028 by Supervisors Jerzyk and Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I move approval. I think the language hopefully is self-explanatory. We basically have agreements with all municipalities, and the information I've received is that all municipalities except for the city of Milwaukee is current in the full board and commitment charges that are paid to the county. This would correct the record with regard to the City of Milwaukee charges, which historically has not historically. They have paid in the past, but are in arrears, basically, and
God
this
bless
is
you.
An attempt to correct the records on that. It would reflect tax levy savings of $56,000, and we can certainly call on staff to give more detailed information on some of this, but I would move approval.
Supervisor Jerzyk, please approval of Amendment 1A028. Any comments on this amendment? Mr. Gale, would you like to go over this amendment, 1A028?
Mr. Chair, the only other thing I would add is if this does pass, that we would then get Corporation Counsel to work with the city attorney's office and work on ways to get this brought up to where it should be. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion for approval of Amendment 1A028. Any further discussion? Supervisor Lipscomb.
I was wondering what the administration's been doing in negotiating to have us pay them. Has it had been efforts to collect the bad debts?
My understanding is that there is between the city attorney's office and corp counsel ongoing discussions regarding the billing of boarding fees, and that there has been considerable issues raised to potential overcharge on those boarding fees. So they were waiting till there was a resolution to that issue prior to making the payment. So, to the extent that that issue can be resolved, this revenue could be recognized.
Supervisor Liston, you have the floor if you want.
Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate the resolution and bringing the issue to my attention. It's something I wasn't aware of. I think it's a big number. Obviously, it recognizes that there had historically been some dispute about what the appropriate charge was, but for them to just stop paying entirely seems problematic, particularly in the context of what's in front of us, that we're being asked to subsidize them in other areas, and yet they're not paying their bills at all in this one. So I appreciate it being brought up.
Thank you, Supervisor. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll on this amendment?
Approval. Supervisor Klaus?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Kommel West?
Aye.
Jerzyk?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Helen?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion approved on a vote of 8-1. The next amendment is 1A016 from Supervisors Lipscomb and Jerzyk.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move approval. I appreciate the co-sponsorship. Effectively, this amendment restores the Parks Patrol, as we've discussed in the hearing, and with the promises provided by the sheriff to, in fact, provide the services if the money is restored. It does request that he would submit a report detailing the actual activities, and just so that we can have an update mid-year. But I think it recognizes the importance of Parks Patrol and the insufficiency of the MOU in that. And some, obviously, there may be other reasons why certain people support this and others. But for me, the MOU was insufficient in that it really did not ensure a level of service. It did not provide me any appropriate assurance that we would, in fact, get the kind of patrols that I think are needed. And then with respect to the 911, I just object to the premise that we would be asked to backfill their budget at this stage in the transition, I think that the implied threat that we got from the city that if we don't go forward with this, that they're going to actually go backwards on the progress we've made in terms of efficiency of answering these calls was deplorable.
Thank you, Supervisor. Mr. Horst.
Chairman, Supervisors, Milwaukee Police Department is here today to talk about their proposed level of services to address any concerns that the committee would like to have them do, since it hasn't been discussed in any committee state, if that is the desire of the chair and the committee.
Thank you. Supervisor Coleman.
I mean, that's fine if they're here to speak. I welcome their testimony. There seemed to be some confusion at the last hearing. I heard from people at the city saying we didn't give the MPD a chance to speak. I just wanted to make the record clear. I was the chair of the committee. We heard from the sheriff. We do have the blue cards. Nobody from MPD filled out a blue card asking to speak. As we close the meeting with the sheriff, I mentioned again, if somebody wants to speak, please fill out a blue card. I don't know if they had left already. So there was no intention of not having them speak. Just so everybody's clear that they were welcome to speak at the last committee meeting, but they, like any other member of the public, would be expected to fill out a blue card like this if they want to speak.
Okay. Supervisor Schmidt. Then Jurassic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a significant upper, but I haven't voted for any, but this one I will be voting for. Because if we don't accept the deal, then we have to give the money back to sheriff, and it is also about jobs. I've given this a lot of thought, I'm sure we all have. My thought process was here, what if this process was reversed? I mean, you know, if we'd be voting here as City of Milwaukee at the County Council, and we would be saying, well, we're going to knock off 38 to 50 jobs, whatever, from Milwaukee Police, and we're going to give all those responsibilities to Milwaukee County. We're also going to give Milwaukee County, you know, $1.5 million or more dollars than that. I don't think that'd be a very good deal for the city of Milwaukee. I don't see why anybody would take that. And I guess that's my thought process here then, too. I just don't see. And, you know, we all have problems. Law enforcement's a tough job, just like behavioral health's a tough job. You know, I've listened to my colleagues, particularly. I have, four wards in the city of Milwaukee near my area. And I work with one neighborhood, so it's Cooper Park. And when I sit down with them, Alderman Bowles is there and Milwaukee Police are there. So, I mean, I know Milwaukee's involved. There's no question about that. Okay? But also I hear complaints from residents. The few I hear, I don't represent much of Milwaukee like many people on this committee do. But, I mean, they have their own problems. And God bless them. You know, it's a tough job. But to expect them to pick up all this extra duties, even if we give them more money and we lose jobs in the process, It just doesn't make sense here. It just doesn't get together. And they have their own problems to face, like I said, and their own challenges to put these extra duties. They're going to work out these furloughs. We all know the different situations. It just doesn't add up. And then I think in the future we're going to look more on the sheriff, House of Correction, stuff like that. I think that's going to come, it's going to have to come in a while, or maybe next year. But when the executive puts a budget together, which I appreciate, then we're going to have to face this situation. I think you just, as the previous county exec did, if they don't have more than enough money to do their duties, then you just budget them less. And we don't go through this other process like we're supposed to micromanage and figure out. Let's face it, I'm a little wary, too, about, Supervisor Lipscomb feels good because he's got assurance that we're going to get all this back. Well, I don't have that same optimism. Just because the sheriff can do what he wants to budget. And, I want the sheriff, I want law enforcement to go where there's priorities. And, if something else is going on, the Park Patrol is not going to be the first priority. But I think in relation to this amendment, we're going to need the Sheriff Department halfway through this budget year, in the middle of 2013, we need to kind of hold them to the fire, or hold them responsible and say, now, what have we done in these certain areas? What is the number of calls? What are we actually doing if we put all these positions back? I think that goes hand in hand. We do expect the best bang for our dollar that we can get, and we're paying for that. So I think a lot of colleagues pretty much feel the same way, maybe for some different reasons, but I wanted to make those comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Jerzyk and Supervisor Roma West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank Supervisor Lipscomb for drafting this, and I was pleased to co-sponsor it. Couple points. This is Milwaukee County government. I'm one of the supervisors that represents only areas outside the city of Milwaukee. But we have 19 municipality subdivisions, and we must govern with a viewpoint that we govern from a countywide perspective. That's number one. Number two, I tend to be one of the more conservative members when it comes to fiscal issues. I'm going to make it very clear that this is all being put with regard to the amendment on either law enforcement grants, which takes care of about 1.8, and the rest is on tax levy. I am supporting an upper tax levy for public safety. I did have an opportunity to review the case law that the sheriff gave us with regard to the sheriff stating he has a responsibility to respond or cooperate to this government. That was a workers' comp case, and it was at most dicta, a very old case in Wisconsin. I do not believe that that case is controlling, and the sheriff's department does need to cooperate with the second branch of government with regard to budgetary issues. Now, we've heard from the sheriff, and I asked him these questions when he was before us. He stated he will cooperate, and I'm going to take him at his word on that. He will cooperate. This money that we are putting back into the sheriff's budget is for what we said it's for, and my understanding from both the cooperation of the sheriff and with regard to the review I've had, case law and statutory regard, the second floor does control the budget, and the sheriff will cooperate. So that's the way I'm looking at this. I truly hope that we stop doing this game of just representing one of the municipalities within the county. And I hope we've seen the last of these kinds of provisions being given to us. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Roma West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to ask permission to be added as a co-sponsor. I was really looking forward to supporting Supervisor Borkowski's amendment regarding this. Unfortunately, we've tapped into some of the same funds, so that's not going to work. But I appreciate the spirit in which this was done and the spirit of the amendment Supervisor Borkowski also brought is bringing forward. You know, I've had a town hall meeting. I sent out a budget survey. And the support for MPD taking over the park is just not in my district. And again, I represent one district, the Near South Side. It is an inner city district. We do have a lot of issues. And I want to say publicly, and I think most people, especially my colleagues, know this, you know, I love MPD. I have a great relationship with District 2. I work very, very closely with them. But, you know, the long and short of it is that they have a diversion unit, which is a unit that sits by the phone and tries to find ways to not send a squad out when people call in. So if you have a noise disturbance, if you have, you know, noisy kids in the street or, you know, quality of life types of issues, you know, and again, and this is not in every MPD district, but in my district, we have somebody who, you know, who tries to find ways in order to not send a squad out. If your house is broken into, if your car is broken into, you're not going to get, for most part, a squad out. Unless, of course, the person leaves a personal effect or, you know, fingerprints that are noticeable or something, then they will. And I'm not downing them on that. They're very, very busy. I think at last count, District 2 was down about 100 officers. And so there is definitely, you know, they're definitely doing the very best that they can do with the little bit of the little bit that they have. Having said that, I think it's important that we support the sheriff in this. I personally have seen the effects of not having a TEU this summer. I've got problems in two parks that I never had problems in before. I am the defendant in one of in a prostitution report that happened in the park while I was there. And this is a park that's heavily used by little kids. It has a wading pool. And now I am the, you know, I'm the victim in this crime because witness. I'm not the defendant, sorry. But I'm the, you know, I'm not been registered with the district attorney's office, and I have to file a complaint about prostitution in a park. Again, and little kids were standing there. Little kids were the ones that brought it to my attention that this was happening. And so, you know, bad things happen when we don't have a strong showing in our park with security. And I just can't support not keeping the sheriffs in our park. Again, I've been here since 2004. I've seen the TEU work. I know it works. The neighbors love it. You get the numbers of the deputies. You call them. They come right to you. It's a great program. And I think that it's very worthy of our support. And I think it's worthy of our taxpayer dollars. And I think that my constituents will agree with me on that. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. If Captain Rapp, Captain Gasek, and Mr. Plant would come forward. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joel Plant. I'm the Chief of Staff with the Milwaukee Police Department. With me today are Captain Gary Gasek, who currently commands our Communications Division, and Captain Aaron Rapp, who is the commander of our Office of Management, Analysis, and Planning, which includes our Planning and Logistics section, which develops special deployment plans throughout the city. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. We have an MOU in front of you for review. I know that there have been amendments offered regarding that MOU. The MOU really has three pieces in it. One is the 911 communications center and the handling of cellular 911 calls originated in or near the city of Milwaukee. And I'll speak in detail about that. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that is probably the most viable piece of the MOU at this point. The second piece of the MOU would be the lakefront coverage, which would establish the Milwaukee Police Department as the primary law enforcement agency for that function on the lakefront year-round, including the most heavily used time of the year, which would be summertime and the special events that occur at the lakefront and near the lakefront. And the third piece is what I would call our ancillary parks, which is the remainder of approximately, I believe, 76 county parks within the city of Milwaukee, and the policing services that the city of Milwaukee currently provides there and is willing to continue to provide, frankly, regardless of the success or failure of the MOU. If I could address specifically the 911 center issues, this has been a discussion that's been had over quite a few years. In 2003, 4, and 5, I believe, there were conversations during which the city of Milwaukee made the argument that we now hear some of the county representatives making, which is, well, of course the City of Milwaukee Communication Center should handle the cellular calls that are occurring in the City of Milwaukee. There should be no delay in service. That should not go through the county sheriff's office. That was the point we made in 2005, unsuccessfully, when the county decided that it would establish itself as the primary PSAP, public safety answering point, for the county, thereby taking control of all of the cellular calls, in addition to other things, the cellular calls that originate within the city of Milwaukee. We are now in a position where the sheriff is very interested in handing that responsibility back to the city of Milwaukee. We've been having this conversation with the sheriff's office for the last 2.5 or 3 years. In 2009, we began earnest conversations about the mechanics of switching back the handling of cellular 911 calls within the city of Milwaukee to be handled directly without any patch through, handled directly by the city of Milwaukee Police Department Communications Center. We received data from the sheriff's office, and based on that data, we began transferring the smaller service providers. As we began transferring the smaller service providers, with no fiscal impact, all right, we didn't come back and say you need to compensate us for this. We agreed that from a customer service perspective, it made sense to directly answer the calls and not have the lag from the time the person makes the call to have them transferred from the sheriff's office to the city before an officer could be dispatched or the call could be handled appropriately. As soon as we began receiving those calls, we realized that the estimates that we'd been given, the data we'd been given from the sheriff's office, was inaccurate on a factor of about 100%. So we stopped the transfer of the additional service providers, the carriers, and currently handling four of the six cell service providers in the county. Captain Gasek can give you very specific numbers on the increase in call volume that we're handling. I do want to address one notion that was made to you at the last meeting where this topic was discussed, and that's this notion that it shouldn't cost the city of Milwaukee any money. There should be no additional staff needed to handle these calls because they're getting the calls anyhow. That is true when you look at the dispatch calls. What that comment wholly ignores is the bulk of the workload associated with cellular calls, which is the abandoned call, the accidental 911 call where someone disconnects before a communicator can answer. We are required to call that number back. That creates workload to identify that call and to make that in-person call. There's no machine that does it. It's a human being. That's a huge volume of calls. The second category that was wholly ignored based on that comment is the duplicate calls. Traffic accidents are probably the best example of that, where you'll have 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 200 well-intended citizens calling to report something they saw. And all of those calls require a human being to answer the phone and say, thank you, we have that information. Captain Gasek, again, can walk you through the specifics on the volume of increased workload that we have already experienced based on, in a good faith effort, taking out four of the six cellular providers in rough numbers, and again, Captain Gasek can give you the specific numbers, in rough numbers, taking on the remaining two carriers will, again, double the workload that we've already assumed at no cost to the county. Now, the city of Milwaukee taxpayers are footing the bill at a cost of about $225,000 a year in overtime because we do not have the additional staff needed to absorb the workload that we've already taken on, again, based on the good faith agreement that we had with the county sheriff. We are not interested in turning the calls back to the county if we can avoid it. The point is to provide the best and most efficient service to the residents of the city of Milwaukee, who are residents of the county of Milwaukee, and the way to do that is to have us directly answer their cellular 911 calls and not have a transfer protocol. So we're interested in seeing that get accomplished. We do have very specific data that we can share with you today if you're interested in that. And Captain Gasek can give you information about the additional staffing that will be needed, is actually currently needed, and will be needed in order for us to complete the takeover of those cellular calls to be handled directly by the city of Milwaukee. And again, I want to go back to my first point. This is exactly the argument we were making 7 and 8 years ago when the decision was made to have the county be the primary public safety answering point. Here we are now that the money has effectively evaporated, the additional grant funding doesn't exist any longer, and we're all sensitive to that and appreciate the fiscal facts, but here we are making the same argument yet again, and we're happy to answer any questions. If you do have questions about the park plan or the park staffing proposal, Captain Rapp can address those questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Plant. Captain Gasek, would you like to give us any testimony?
Well, I'll be happy to answer whatever questions you have. I think there's no dispute that the Milwaukee Police Department Communications Center has seen a significant increase in the number of calls that we get. Obviously, we're taking four of the six carriers. The two carriers that we are currently not getting calls directly from are AT&T and U.S. Cellular. Those are two major carriers. And one thing to note is based on the level of technology that we have today, as best as a cellular carrier can program a cellular tower, there's going to be overlap. There's going to be times in which a citizen is physically standing in West Dallas or Brown Deer or Greenfield or Franklin, and they're making a 911 call. For various reasons we won't get into the weeds, that call is pinging off of a tower that's programmed in the city of Milwaukee to send those calls to us. So that's an additional workload. Is we've seen, I think, a 1,700% increase from 2010 from 2010 to 2011 in the number of calls that we're answering initially for suburban jurisdictions. And from 2011 to 2012 year-to-date, that increase went 183% in addition to the 17-fold percent increase the year before. That's a workload. There's a cost to the workload. The Sheriff's Office, the Milwaukee Police Department had meetings. We both think that it's in the best interest to finish the transition and have all major carriers routing those calls directly to us. But there is a cost. And it was the timing of the city's budget and the county budget that brought some of these conversations together in late June. And so they obviously also realize that there is a fiscal impact to taking these wireless calls. I'll be happy to answer whatever specific questions you might have.
Thank you very much. And Captain Rapp, with respect, we're sorry we couldn't hear your testimony at the Judiciary Committee before you had to leave. So if you'd like.
No problem. I was working out a deal with Miller Park at the time.
Yes.
I want to start with speaking about something that Supervisor Schmidt mentioned earlier. He mentioned and he acknowledged that the City Police Department has a lot of work to do. And I thank you for recognizing that. However, what I've seen in these last three meetings is that this board is really only getting one side of the story. Now, granted that Supervisor Roma West's constituents are giving her part of that account and that story as well, it's not till right now that you're going to hear our side of the story. And that side is that we already patrol the parks within the city of Milwaukee. And for as many as constituents as Supervisor Roma West has, it says that the Sheriff's Department does a good job there. I certainly would not dispute that. There are probably tenfold citizens within the city of Milwaukee that will say, we see the city police in these parks more than anybody else. So transferring the service of the parks to the city, at least from the police department's perspective, makes sense. We already have, as part of our geographical responsibilities, our squads, our beats, our bicycle patrols are already assigned there. This would just enhance it and more solidify what they're assigned to do there. The city also, as you probably are well aware, is prepared to and will offer up any data when asked for. Well, nearly any data. Aside from certain deployment strategies, we're always willing and able to offer up data when it comes to calls for service, proactive policing in and around the parks, things like that. I would like to throw out one example to you as far as numbers. Within those approximately 76 parks within the city, I know that the very first meeting somebody here brought up that there was nearly 100 within the city of Milwaukee. Well, we'll have to do a recount, but somewhere between 76 and 100. In 2011, the city police handled 2,153, so 2,153 calls for service. Now, I want to let you know that doesn't necessarily mean that it was a citizen calling 2,153 times. It also includes proactive activity, subject stops, traffic stops, backing up other squads, things like that. What it does not include are duplicative calls. For example, a fight in the park, 10 people call, it only be counted as one. To date, so for the first 9 months of this year, we handled 1,575 calls. So the question may come to your minds, or maybe it doesn't, based on the data I just gave you. What are we already doing, and what might we do further if this indeed was formally assigned as part of the city duties? I have other data, other things that I could throw forth as far as city ordinances versus county ordinances, types of tools we have in our tool bag. But unless there's questions on those things, I'm not going to bore you to death.
Thank you very much, Captain. Any other comments before we go to the committee members and ask if they have any questions? Any questions, comments? I would like to, Supervisor Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you say you speak on behalf of the police department, by the way, thank you for coming today. I appreciate you guys coming. Do you mean the individual officers? Have you sent a survey of them. Have you talked to them regarding this this MOU?
I can handle that. Supervisor, we have not done a survey of the staff of the Milwaukee Police Department regarding the MOU. We have been engaged in conversations about possible consolidation of services, taking into account the work that we're currently doing, work that we anticipate we will do specific to the 911 center, and the work that we could assume in regard to the parks. We have not taken a poll of the members regarding.
Okay. I don't know the number, but are you guys understaffed?
Again, Supervisor, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a police department, an urban police department, especially in the United States, that would say they have more than enough staff.
You're right. What about, are you 100 men understaffed?
I'm sorry?
Are you 100 men understaffed?
I think that we have vacancies at this point, and I do not have the current vacancy schedule in front of me, but we, again, always carry vacancies based on attrition and the lag it takes between hiring, recruiting and hiring officers, training them and having them on the street. So you will always have a vacancy rate in any large policing organization. I don't know the specific numbers, but I would tell you that it's not unusual to have several dozen, if not 100 or more, vacancies in the Milwaukee Police Department, not through malfeasance or maliciousness, just through attrition.
Okay. And, I don't know, from my perspective, it seems like you guys conceded to the Park Patrol, but you're still encouraging us to try to accept this 911 calls proposal.
Regarding the Park Patrol, I think that obviously there are policy questions that need to be answered, and I've heard quite a bit of discussion at a variety of county committee meetings, and I've obviously been paying attention to the public comments as well. So there are there's a difference of opinions in terms of the likelihood of that being successful. What I can tell you is that we stand prepared to execute the agreement as it's been drafted. We stand prepared to provide the services as outlined in the agreement. And as you heard Captain Rapp explain, we are currently providing service in the city of Milwaukee relative to county parks. We will not stop doing that. Just similar to the way that the city of Milwaukee Police Department has provided policing services on county buses in the city of Milwaukee, the entire city is our jurisdiction, and we will continue to provide policing services. The dedication of the primary law enforcement agency in the parks is the question before you in terms of the MOU. Regarding the 911 center, I would suggest we try to find a way to handle these cellular calls in the most efficient manner possible. I have a letter here from the sheriff to the chief of police dated October 1st urging us to sit down and find a way to handle this as quickly as possible, noting that these conversations have been ongoing for several years. There has been a partial transfer of the responsibility. There's been no money exchanged in terms of the additional resources or additional staffing that we need to provide as the city in order to handle what the county committed to doing in 2012.
That letter from the sheriff?
It is.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. Well, I just want to say I support the MPD. I support all the hard work that you guys do. I wish there was a way to work together with the sheriff's department, but we did get this commitment, and I look forward to him fulfilling that commitment regarding the TEU unit. And we'll see. You know, if he does not do it, hopefully you guys will be willing to come back next year. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Alexander and Chairwoman Dmitrievich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question regarding the potential of MPD hiring laid-off county law enforcement. If those laid-off officers currently live within Milwaukee County but not within the city of Milwaukee, if they would be required to move within the city of Milwaukee in order to take on those new positions.
Thank you, Supervisor. Currently, all City of Milwaukee employees, including all police officers, are required to maintain residency in the City of Milwaukee.
Thank you.
Chairwoman Dmitrievich.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. What I wanted to understand for the record is, under this MOU and this proposal, because we were just in receipt of the independent fiscal analysis from our comptroller, and when I'm reviewing it, even though we just received it, I just want to make sure, under this proposal, the MOU, Milwaukee Police Department wouldn't be hiring any additional officers for this patrolling. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct. Under the currently drafted MOU, we anticipate no hiring of additional police officers in order to fulfill the 2013 aspect of this agreement. That is fundamentally because we don't have the opportunity to hire people and have them on the street anytime in 2013 at this point.
Okay. I just think that's something for policymakers to think about, that, again, that's the police department saying that they're going to use their current existing staff to proactively patrol the parks, and that's something that I have a little bit of a trouble, you know, reconciling. Also, I think it's questionable, then, why would we then send funding, what is the funding being used for, then? So that's more of a hypothetical question, but thank you very much.
Supervisor Roland West,
would you like me to respond to the notion of what the funding would be used for?
Please respond.
Regarding 911, I think we've made it it's pretty black and white, if you will, in the agreement that the additional funding for 911 calls would be used to hire additional telecommunicator positions in order to handle the volume of workload of those cellular calls. In terms of the parks, we've got the lakefront aspect of that of the proposal. Is very heavy in 2013 on overtime staffing for parks events. It's heavy on that, again, because as I noted before, if we wanted to hire new police officers right now, and we had a list today, and I had the training staff available today, we would not have them on the street until very late in 2013. Now, we do not have a list available today, we do not have the funding available today, and we don't have the training staff available today to start another academy class. So just logistically speaking, I could not put additional officers on the street in 2013 if I started that process right now, and certainly subsequent to any budget decision-making process. So the lakefront plan is very heavy in 2013 on overtime staffing. We do a lot, as a large organization, we do a lot of special event staffing and proactive policing on an overtime basis. We do dedicated patrol missions. We do violence reduction initiatives in very tight geographically based areas entirely on an overtime basis. So in 2013, that's what you would see at the lakefront. Again, heavy on overtime, but not exclusively overtime staffing at the lakefront. In terms of the ancillary parks, the non-lakefront parks, we already do proactive policing. We already do responsive policing in the parks. That will not stop. The additional funding will allow us to dedicate additional resources specifically for proactive policing based on our calls for service, based on our knowledge of special events in the parks. That will not change. It will simply be enhanced should the MOU be approved.
Thank you. Supervisor Roman West and Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is in regards to patrolling. When you say you currently patrol the park, what does that entail?
I'll defer to Captain Rep.
Well, it involves the common things that you would see out of any local law enforcement or county law enforcement officer, and that would be foot patrols, bicycle patrols, and even squad patrols, especially when there aren't expected crowds in the park. I'll provide one example, and I know there's lots of them, but take Copernicus Park, I believe it, and I could be wrong, and it's in Supervisor Haas' district. Myself and several other people that I work with live near that park, and although we don't see law enforcement in there very often or around there very often, when we do see them, it's exclusively MPD, and it is in those three formats, bicycle, foot, and squad. Now, that's not to take away from when there is a legitimate call for service. You'll usually see both entities of us responding, especially if it's a more severe call for service, like a beating or a large fight or a robbery. You almost never will see just the Sheriff's Department respond to that. So I hope I answered your question. It's literally those three items.
Okay. So I guess my question is, so on a regular basis, so on a daily basis, if you have a squad unit that has a park in it, that squad is in that park on a daily basis, getting out of the car, walking around, talking to people.
Are you talking about currently?
Yes.
I would say no to that. Currently, it's when they have unobligated time that they'll spend time doing things like you're speaking of.
Okay. My other question is in regards to county ordinance versus city ordinance. So when you have things like, so if you were to take over patrolling the park and you came upon a group of individuals drinking in the park, that's a county ordinance. Are you then able to write a ticket out?
We do.
Under that ordinance?
I looked into it, and I looked at what the county has for ordinances for enforcement within parks in the county, and what the city has for ordinances for making enforcement efforts within county parks within our city. And they nearly mirror each other. I will tell you the county has more of them. But the ones that we may not have and we see a need for, mm-hmm. we can quickly draft up, take our to our legislative reference bureau, have an older person, you know, sponsor it and get it passed. I will tell you we have plenty of tools as far as it comes to ordinances that would apply to the majority of things that you would see occurring in the parks.
And my last question has to do with equipment. I know that the sheriff has a wide variety of equipment that they use. Actually, I have one more question after this. But they have a wide variety of equipment that they use, ATVs and, you know, ATV horses, those type of things. Are those things that MPD is equipped with? Are those things that will have to come out, would come out of that $1.7 million that we'd pay you to?
Other than the ATVs, we're equipped with everything that every other major law enforcement jurisdiction is equipped with. In fact, once again, case in point, Copernicus Park, we had horses in the park. We had our tactical enforcement unit, oddly enough, it's called TEU in the city of Milwaukee, which is our SWAT team, in there for, this was actually for like a neighborhood block watch thing or group meeting, a once a year thing. In 2011, we had the whole grouping of specialty units with their specialty equipment in the park to show far Southside residents that the police exist and this here's what they have available to them, and it enhances the community police relations.
The last question I have, Mr. Chairman, is in regards to authority. So right now, if I have an issue and my district covers four big parks, and so if I have an issue in Mitchell Park, and I have had several, I call Inspector Schmidt or I call Inspector Bailey, and they send people out, and it gets taken care of. You obviously, we don't have oversight over MPD. So how does that work in regards to supervisors being able to access and address issues that we have? We have, you know, the part of it I think that is the sticking point is that we have no, we really have no teeth in this whole situation because we don't have direct oversight for you, for your budget, for any of that. And so how do you envision that working, seeing as that we are a separate elected body, that we're elected to oversee county functions, and you are a city entity that's overseen by a city, by your city elected officials.
I would offer the following. Thank you for the question, Supervisor. The City of Milwaukee Police Department recognizes that it sits within the County of Milwaukee. And I would offer, and I'm sure that there are anecdotes to the contrary, but I would offer that if you were to call District 2 and talk to Captain Pix at District 2 right now, today, about an issue in a park within her geographic responsibility, which heavily encompasses your district, you would get the response that you would get if you were an alderman in the City of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. You would get similar response as a pure legislator within the County of Milwaukee in any district. The one of the focal points that we've really tried to drive home in the police department is that the district captains are the touch point for the majority of citizen contacts. The district captain is responsible for the services provided within their district, is responsible for handling specific complaints and issues within their district, and they are the place where most neighborhood groups, elected officials, concerned residents, they're the place that the police department's impact is most directly felt. And that has been a bit of a growing pain for the police department, but it has been successful. And again, as I said, you will certainly be able to find anecdotes where satisfaction was not 100%. At the same time, I would offer that under this agreement, should the City of Milwaukee become the primary law enforcement agency for park patrol, park services in the county, or I'm sorry, in the city, you would see similar, if not better, response from our district captains than you're receiving right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome, Supervisor. led... Oh, Supervisor Jurczyk, I'm sorry.
Just one follow-up question. If I understood your statement correctly, the monies for policing in the MOU would mostly go to using overtime hours? Was that correct?
For the lakefront for 2013, yes, that's correct.
And I'm not familiar with the City of Milwaukee police contract, the union contract. Basically, is it time and a half, double time? What do you get for overtime?
Most generally speaking, it's time and a half, yes.
I mean, that basically translates into, for the same dollars, less policing than if the county kept the monies within the county and, paid the sheriff deputies to do the work as a park patrol at straight time. So it actually sounds to me like there'd be less policing based on the fact that we'd be paying overtime.
It's a fair notion, and the gross assessment, I think, is generally accurate. What I would offer, and we deal with this within the city right now on our own, what overtime funding allows you to do is generate much more flexibility in your staffing than straight time. So instead of having to schedule folks in eight-hour blocks, we can schedule in much more time-specific segments and much shorter segments. So I might have someone on overtime for 4 hours. That equates to 6 hours of straight time. That is much more efficient over the course of a year than scheduling folks on straight time in eight-hour chunks.
Can I add to that? I think not only is the deployment strategy much different than what's being provided by the sheriff's office, but when we analyzed this, there was about 16, according to the sheriff's office, about 1622 hours worked out of 2,088. That compares roughly to about 1850 hours on the job for an MPD officer. So you're getting more on an annual basis, given the considerable greater PTO of the sheriff's office staff. And then finally, we do have higher legacy or higher fringe rates that you have to factor in. So it's not necessarily one for one if you're doing it all on overtime. I think what Joel is saying is, given that where the recruitment classes are this year, they're not going to have a time to bring on a recruitment class to provide staffing just down for the lakefront. But what their strategy is longer term, it would be to provide more dedicated funding in year two or three for staffing that. This is not unlike what they're presently staffing Miller Park at either. So just want to make those few points.
Supervisor Jurczyk?
I mean, the MOU only goes out 3 years. I mean, you have contractual years, so there's not necessarily a guarantee that this is going to be long-term for the city, and I don't know that they'd be interested in adding officers based on contractual. But I'm wondering, we got a report from the comptroller reviewing this. So I'm wondering, did the comptroller's report take into consideration the issue that the policing, at least initially, would be paid overtime rate rather than straight time? I'm just wondering if the comptroller can consider that piece.
Mr. Maskey, if you would please come forward.
Good afternoon. When we did the analysis regarding that, we looked at the response that we got from the City of Milwaukee Police Department. The way we analyzed it, though, we analyzed it on a straight time basis. So our table that's included in there, based upon the number of officers, is based on a straight time basis. We would have to adjust that. And they did respond to their thing that most of the effort in the parks outside of the lakefront would be done on a straight time basis, and most of the effort down at the lakefront and for special events would be on an overtime basis. We would have to adjust that number slightly that we included in a table in there. So,
thank you. And I won't ask for an additional report right now until we see what's happening with these amendments. I just want to make the statement once again that I represent a district that includes more lakefront than the City of Milwaukee. And when we say lakefront, people are actually talking about the City of Milwaukee lakefront, which is less lakefront than the most of the county has outside the City of Milwaukee. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Romo-West and Supervisor Stanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the issue that I have with this MOU is that what I'm hearing is that this is going to be more of the same. It's going to be exactly what we did this year. So we're not going to have a designated park patrol. There's not going to be anybody in the park. It's going to be done on an overtime basis. You know, the lakefront is honestly the least of my worries. And I know that it's my good friend Inspector Daly and Inspector Schmidt. They're tired of me hearing, you know, tired of me saying this. But I'm not worried about the lakefront. I mean, we have a small army at the lakefront. And so what I'm worried about is I'm worried about the families that are picnicking in our parks that are being disturbed by, you know, the drunken party next to them, or the little kids that are almost being hit by a car because there's cars driving through the parks, which shouldn't be. You know, people going away and leaving their fires burning, these type of things. This is what quality of life types of issues. And so what I'm interested in doing is I'm interested in restoring a park patrol. I want actually people who go out every day and they, you know, put their uniforms on and they say, I'm going to the park and I'm going to spend, you know, all day, every day in these parks. If they're, you know, on the grass in Grant Park and making big divots in the grass, then we're going to catch those guys. If they're doing graffiti in the parks, if they're drinking, if they're, you know, these are the type of things. This is what I think, and this is what I'm hearing people in Milwaukee County say. Nobody has more respect for MPD than I do. I think you guys do a great job. And again, you're doing a great job with just with a little bit, which we all are. But I appreciate, and District 2, you're absolutely right. If I called and said, hey, I need whatever, they're there. They help a lot with the pool. They help a lot with other things in the park, and they never, you know, they never turn their head. At the same time, I also have Mitchell Park. And at Mitchell Park, if Bob Donovan, my alderman, is driving home and sees, you know, the police in Mitchell Park, I get a call saying, Peggy, why is MPD in the park? Where's the sheriff? And so, you know, he's exacerbated because he wants those resources out on the street. He wants those resources answering those calls from the noisy neighbor. And so, you know, I'm really not interested in continuing the status quo, especially of this year, 2012, this summer, was the status quo. If that's what you're comparing, you know, if that's what this MOU covers, then, you know, it didn't work. It didn't work. And I appreciated all of the help from MPD, but we did not have, you know, the target enforcement unit out in our parks, and people noticed. And so what I'm interested in, again, is I'm interested in a patrol that puts a uniform on, that's driving through parks, that's on their ATV, that's on their horse, that's on their bike, that's actually serving the people in Milwaukee County while they're in their parks and making them feel like they're safe and inviting people to come to the park with their family and their small children, because I feel like we're losing part of that. And again, you know, the least of my worries is just the city of Milwaukee Lakefront, because I think, you know, I get calls from constituents all the time that are like, what in the world is going on down at the lakefront? Why are all these sheriffs down there? What is going on? And I have to explain to them that there's nothing going on. That's just how we patrol our lakefront. And so, you know, it's true. But I just wanted you to be clear on that. And so the way that I vote today is not a vote against Milwaukee Police Department. I think you guys do a great job. I just, again, I'm in the interest of looking out for the people that I'm elected to look out for. I really do believe that a targeted park patrol, not just the lakefront, but all of our parks, is really the way to go to protect our investments as well as to protect our residents. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Before I go, thank you, Supervisor. Before I go to Supervisor Stamper, I want to ask Mr. Kemmels a question, but I also want to know if you have this do you have this independent analysis from the comptroller.
I personally have not seen that. I won't speak for all of the departmental staff.
Thank you very much. Mr. Camholtz.
Yes, sir.
With respect to your analysis regarding the memorandum of understanding, mm-hmm. did it take into account the proposed furlough days for Milwaukee Police Department?
I think that issue has raised, come up several times, and you know the quick answer was no. But I think you really need to look at how they are going to be staffing the lakefront. $950,000 under this agreement staffs the lakefront. And they will be not pulling from District 5 or District 1. They will probably be pulling from other areas within the district to staff this, much like they staff special events, as you had heard from Mr. Plant. So I think the furlough days is irrelevant with respect to the staffing with respect to the lakefront. In terms of the inland parks is predominantly on straight time, and as you have heard, you know, there are minimum staffing levels throughout the seven district stations. They're staffed 24/7 on three shifts. They're currently in the parks. This was to provide dedicated funding, much like the UWM agreement and other agreements out there, to enhance that and provide that kind of support that Supervisor West had indicated she wanted. So I think that the three furlough days is kind of irrelevant with that respect, too, because it's an enhancement of service on the $250,000.
So you're of the opinion that even in the parks that the furlough days are irrelevant, according to your model?
Well, I mean, if they're stepping on overtime for the lakefront, I think that would be the answer would be it wouldn't, the three furlough days would not have an impact. And in terms of they're already patrolling, and there's an additional $250,000 to provide dedicated service, it would probably be, you know, an enhancement from the current base. So you're getting additional service. Would the three furlough days eat into that? Probably. But you're still getting an enhancement from the base of $250,000.
Thank you. Okay. Supervisor Stanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supervisor Lipscomb alluded to this issue earlier, but I was just thinking the previous amendment indicated that there's a balance that the city has with the county. In negotiations and dialogue, was that taken into account in regards to this MOU? If the balance is $1,099,000?
My understanding... That is a separate issue altogether. My understanding of that situation is that it was ongoing discussions between Corp Counsel at Milwaukee County and the City Attorney's Office regarding the accuracy of the billings that Milwaukee County had sent to the city. And until that issue can be resolved, collections on that cannot proceed. So that's a separate issue altogether. We were really focused, and hopefully it can get resolved. But with respect to this agreement, we really wanted to focus on protective services and the three elements, lakefront, inland parks, and the E911 center.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you, Mr. Camholtz. Any supervisors not on the Finance, Personnel, and Audit Committee, do you have any questions, comments, concerns to be directed to the gentleman in front of us? Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question as far as the estimated amount of officers that would be appointed to watch over these parks. Is there an estimate of an actual number that we will have under their proposal? City police officers.
We don't have an estimated number as far as to how many officers would be patrolling these parks at any given point in time. We do know that we will be increasing staffing at the lakefront and in the parks, for example, in Sherman or Washington Park when things go on like Fathers for Progress and other these other big events, like in Humboldt Park, Chill on the Hill, things like that. We increase staffing at those things, so the staffing levels go up and down. The money really is applied towards full-time equivalent costs.
Thank you very much, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just sounds that we need more details here. Still some things that are up in the air. And we know what we would get from the Sheriff's Department at this point. We have a plan for that with details, but it doesn't seem like we have all the details here.
Thank you, Supervisor Bowen. If there are no other questions, concerns, comments, Madam Clerk.
Motion for approval?
Did I? On the amendment. It's on the amendment. Did I? Did you?
Yes, I did. I'm going to ask you, can you add me as a co-sponsor, please? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a unanimous consent to do so? Yeah, this is on the amendment. This is on the amendment.
Before you vote, you do have one comment on the amendment.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors Josh Fudge from DOS Fiscal.
Mr. Fudge.
Sorry.
What is it about?
Regarding the cost of the amendment, I just wanted to point the comptroller's independence of this also points out on the first page at the bottom of the first bullet that there are two other positions that were eliminated in 2012 that should be restored if this MOU is rejected. The cost of those positions is about $137,000. So the cost of this amendment, if the MOU is going to be rejected, should be closer to $1,663,000.
So there would be added tax levy. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Approval of Amendment 18016, Supervisor Hogg.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Homo West.
Aye.
Jerzyk.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Collin?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion approved. Opposed? 9-0.
Thank you very much.
The next amendment is 18004 by Supervisor Borkowski.
Mr. Chairman?
Supervisor?
The objective has been achieved, so this amendment is moot. So I will withdraw it.
Supervisor Borkowski is withdrawing. Thank you. Amendment 18004. Thank you. Yes, please.
We are now on Amendment 18015 by Supervisor Weishaupt.
Yes, Supervisor Washington.
If you could combine 18015 and 18024, I would withdraw them too. They dealt with the past item.
Thank you, Supervisor. Is by Supervisor Washington. He is withdrawing amendments 18015 and 18024. Thank you, sir. Amendment 18005.
The next one is by Supervisor Borkowski and Philip Dinkley.
Let's see. Supervisor Roman West moves approval of that particular amendment. Further, Supervisor Borkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have the votes, it's best just to keep quiet.
What is the.
What?
Yes, sir. We'll see, Supervisor. Any comments, questions, concerns by committee members? Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll on Amendment 18005?
Approval, Supervisor Foss.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Homo F.
Aye.
Grizzit.
Aye.
Liscom.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Schamper.
Aye.
Collin.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved, 9-0.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
The next amendment is 18002 by Supervisor Roma West.
Supervisor Roman West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move approval on the United States property. The sheriff was before us. We had quite a healthy conversation about the property and the application in which the sheriff kind of alluded to that the property was a all the time, I believe, was one of the statements that he made. But in actuality, we received a report that shows that there's been quite a significant improvement in the property room over the last 2 years. And in fact, this year we've had 7 people that have filed litigation in regards to the property room, and of those, we've only paid 2 of them. And so I think if it's not broke, don't fix it. And so the property room, again, you're dealing with people's medicine, with their jewelry, with their money, their personal belongings, and I think it's best kept in-house. And so, again, this is $121,618, which I fully believe will pay for itself in the fact that we won't be litigating lawsuits. And just for just for the audience information, in 2010, there were 27 people who filed litigation against Milwaukee County, and of those, we paid 18 of them. And so, there's been a drastic improvement. I think we're just about near perfect if we can go down from 2 or even maintain those 2 next year. Again, I think this pays for itself. In addition to that, when this was put out for RFP, it was about a 2-week window that people were allowed to respond. There was only one respondent. That was Aramark. Aramark currently does our food service out of the House of Correction, so I'm not entirely sure what qualifies them to do property room management. And so, again, I believe this is a great investment for Milwaukee County. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Co-sponsor.
Happily.
Anyone else? I have 2 cards from Stefan Mooney and Christopher Bedreski. I can't read. Bedreski. Would you like to come forward or to testify? And Mr. Shoups, a couple minutes each, please.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Alexander would also like permission to be added as a co-sponsor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there any objection? Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stephen Mooney. I wish to thank Supervisor Roma West for amending the Sheriff's Department budget and urge all members of the board to support the funding of both property rooms using county employees only, now and in the future, due to the sensitive nature of the operations. Thank you.
My name is Christopher Dricke. I'd like to also thank you, Roma West, for supporting us, and hope everybody else on the board was for us too. And I think it's a great idea to keep the in-house and not privatize our department in any way because of the things that we deal with.
Mr. Shoups?
Kevin Shoups, president of Local 567. These jobs need to remain worked by county employees, not privatized.
Any questions of the gentleman?
No?
Thank you very much. We have a motion for approval for Amendment 1A002. We have added 2 co-sponsors have been added to this amendment. Looking to see if there are any requests for commentary, questions. I see none. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
On approval, Supervisor Scott.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Gamper.
Aye.
Cullen.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved and a vote of 9-0.
Thank you.
The next item is Amendment 18034 by Supervisor Jersey.
Okay, let's see if I've got it right here. Some cars. Supervisor Jersey, please.
The purpose of this amendment is to correct the footnote at the bottom of pages 210. 211 regarding the forfeiture funds, and it's the footnote is based on the recent audit, as always an excellent audit by Mr. Hare's group. The audit on the fiscal forfeiture funds did indicate, and Mr. Hare's spent a fair amount of time talking about it, that the forfeiture funds are subject to state or local jurisdiction governing the use of public funds available for law enforcement purposes. That's a direct quote from the audit. Now, since we haven't formally received the audit, and the sheriff's office was indicated in the audit document that they were going to review that themselves, the footnote merely references that the sheriff's office would report back to the committee on judiciary by April of 2013 regarding forfeiture compliance, but it appears that the forfeiture funds do in fact have to comply with our procurement rules, and this is to merely correct the footnote and to indicate that that needs to be that issue needs to still be resolved. So I do move approval.
We have a motion for approval of Amendment 18034. Any comments, questions, concerns? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Supervisor Hodge.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Roma West.
Aye.
Jersey.
Aye.
Lipscomb.
Aye.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
Aye.
Collins.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion approved and a vote of 9-0. The next amendment is 18006 by Supervisor Borkowski.
Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In all
fairness and honesty, first of all, I think we're all grateful for the restoration of the 25 Parks Patrol, the 11 at the airport. This amendment was to stop the entire bleeding, if you will, of the decimation of the Sheriff's Department from the county executive's budget. And I recognize with the limitations that we have, my heart is not into this amendment. I wanted to at least put it out that if there was a chance that we could get this, then I think then things would be perfect, but we're all grateful to get what we've gotten so far, knowing the limitations that we have, and I apologize to the Sheriff's Department because I probably should be fighting harder for this, but I also recognize the limitations that we all have, and like I said, we've done pretty good today, so thank you.
Well, I would say this, Supervisor. There were a lot of positions were rendered vacant last year. A lot of positions were abolished, I should say. And public safety is something valuable that we consider here to be for the county. So I understand fiscally where you are at times, and I also heard you speak with a little regret. So we'll see what happens. Supervisor Cullen.
I couldn't tell. Were you withdrawing this amendment?
I'm not. No.
Oh.
I want to, you know what? If it sees life and breath is breathed into it, then we go. But I guess I don't come here with a safe bet on this amendment.
Well, I hope we breathe enough life into the Sheriff's Department for one day. I do share your concern for public safety, but we do have other concerns.
We do have limitations.
Supervisor Schmidt, we have a motion for approval of the amendment, Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, I appreciate it. Something yesterday about candor, and I think and some of our voties we haven't been able. I don't believe it's popular. I guess it's possible people willing to go to, you know, limits on and never willing to go that far. But to make everybody whole, I mean, I don't think it's very realistic. You know, all of us, I think, would love to give everybody wants, but it never happens in the budget. We have to make sacrifices. The Sheriff's Department has been somewhat immune, not last year, certainly not this year, but we've done, I think, what we needed to do for public safety. And I just think that we have to draw a line, and I think the Sheriff's Department, I think these are important positions, but I think the Sheriff's Department will have to make do with what we've been able to give them. And that's why I go along. I think a couple of Supervisor Collin was saying that, too. Maybe many others are going to be willing to go much farther in many other areas. You are not. I don't think I am either, so I appreciate those remarks. Let's be honest. I mean, I'm not going to start voting for amendments, and I'm not going to vote for the budget. I don't think that would be correct, and that's the major reason I'm not going to vote for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor.
Thank you.
Supervisor Romulus.
Thank you very much. And I'm happy to move approval of this amendment. I think that we started down a slippery slope last year when we started approving huge cuts to public safety. And I know the people are sitting there going, oh my goodness, this is, you know, especially my colleague, Supervisor Borkowski, whom I love dearly, but who's not a senator. And so when he brings forward an amendment for $1.6 million, it causes me pause. And we have a very serious situation in front of us, and we should not undermine the severity of that situation. And that situation is that each year, every budget we get, we have deeper and deeper cuts to public safety. And I'm going to repeat that. Public safety. We're talking about being able to make sure that our constituents are safe in our parks, on our freeways, in this courthouse, and every other county facility, in our jails, at the House of Correction. This is very serious. And, you know, for myself, I'm just not willing to take that risk. I would rather move approval and have people not support restoration of these positions than have to look back and go, should we have spent this money? You know, what will happen when we have the next, attack in Waukesha or in Oak Creek or... God knows where. And hopefully there won't be any other incidents like those but the reality is that there will be. And are we going to be prepared? And how willing are we going to be to continue cutting these services? And I, for one, would rather, wait to see. We did ask for an audit last year of the Sheriff's Department, and I have all expectation that will be ready soon. And so before we go ahead and start, gouging the Sheriff's Department, I'd like to see that there's some type of method to the madness. And I really haven't seen that. I don't have an audit in front of me. I don't know that the Sheriff's Department is top-heavy. I don't know that his training is out of whack with other, municipalities our size. I don't have any information regarding any of the cuts that have been taken in the Sheriff's Department. I don't have anything. And so as a legislator, that makes me very nervous. It makes me very nervous to willingly accept, that we should make these cuts. And I think that the reasoning being that the sheriff has the largest portion of the county budget, maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. Maybe public safety should come first. Maybe you should spend the most money keeping people safe. I know that's just me. And so, again, I do move approval. I will be voting to support this. even if Supervisor Borkowski's heart isn't in it, you know, because I would feel much better if I had an audit in front of me that said, these are the areas where the, you know, where the sheriff's department could trim, or this is a realignment of the sheriff's, you know, deputies, and this is where they should be. And, you know, kind of similar to when we did the audit of the court system, and we found out that we have cut our court system down willy-nilly to the bone, and we just absolutely can't cut anymore. But, and with that, we need more bailiffs in the courts. And so, you know, I like making educated decisions. In this case, I can't tell you that this isn't warranted because I have absolutely no facts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. We have Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want the record to reflect that Supervisor Romo West has been incredibly faithful to all of these amendments that I've put through on the Sheriff's Department. And, again, I probably shouldn't put you all through voting on this because, let's face it, we don't have the money. We've got some other things going on. We actually did pretty good this afternoon before this one. So I am going to withdraw this because I think that we should just take our victories that we have. I think Supervisor Roma West has been eloquent in her support. And in fairness and honesty, if I was on that distinguished panel with everything that you've done so far, I'm not sure I'd be able to support it. And so I'm not going to put you all through this. I just wanted to, when we put all these things together, wanted people to know that, and I think I speak for all of us, that we, the county board, is not going to stand for the decimation of the Sheriff's Department. And we've restored a lot, and I'm grateful to that. And so, Mr. Chairman, I withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Supervisor. Madam Clerk.
The next amendment is 18018 by Supervisor Sam Corporal.
Thank you. Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually pinch-hitting for Supervisor Sanfilippo, who was not able to be with us this afternoon, but rather self-explanatory amendment whereby the position of Human Resources Coordinator, instead of going into the actual HR department, stays in the office of the sheriff. So it's clearly a wash from a tax levy standpoint. But I think what the primary purpose here is that the sheriff's department should have absolute say as to who they hire in their department versus the human resources department that honestly has their plates pretty full. And so that's why I ask for your approval on this.
This is Roman West. So we have to vote on it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Supervisors Haas, Jersey, and Ms. Tohorse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for joining us, Supervisor Borkowski.
Always a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine.
For you.
I'm not getting either. What is the advantage of this? Should we pass this? This would deny the transfer of the HR manager to the Human Resources Department from the office of the sheriff. Would this perform let's say there's first will still be in sheriffs, they'll still be in public safety, they'll still be involved in the department. I don't want to ask you to speak for the HR department, but you know why this was. I guess I'd like to know more about why this is in the budget in the first place.
Sure.
And I see Inspector Schmidt approaching the table.
Mr. Chairman, for me,
Inspector Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the big issue is this. We're a large organization. We have approximately 1,300 employees. to take away our human resource director, placed under the county exec. As my understanding is, there's really only two people in the county that hold that current title, one of them being Marlo Knox, who is our human resource director. To keep hiring the massive amount of human resource items that take place every single day, to take our one dedicated person, put them under a different administrator, definitely puts us at a disadvantage for keeping us well-staffed and all of the many, many human resource issues that Marlo Knox has dealt with every single day. So to keep away from a total centralization, we're asking that that one position remain with the sheriff's office.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Is there anybody from the HR department here that can speak to this? Is anybody from HR here? Is there a representative from the HR department? Mm-hmm. No. This is me. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Jerzyk and Mr. Morris.
I do have questions also. I'm wondering, deputies, when you hire, that we go through testing, is that correct?
Yes, I'm sure.
And does the sheriff's office actually do the testing, or is that done by HR?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, no, the actual testing is done through Central HR.
And I believe HR also hires the correction officers.
Mr. Chairman, that is no. If you mean by Central HR, they do not quote unquote hire them. We get the test. Our human resource director Marlo Knox gets the approvals of who can move forward from Central HR. We then do complete background checks on our employees. Plus, then we have a panel, sheriff's office panel, that's put together through our human resources. Then ultimately I get the to make the approval on whether they're hired or not.
I probably didn't ask that very, very artfully, but they also do the testing for the correctional officers and the initial battery of the screens and so on. HR does that?
Yes.
And do you have individuals within the sheriff's department that are part of the civil service system?
Mr. Chairman, can you repeat one more time, make sure you answered correctly?
Do you have employees within your sheriff's department that are part of the civil service system?
Yes.
You know, I mean, this kind of gets to the theme for me about the sheriff is part of the county, and there needs to be cooperation across departments. So for myself, and I know HR is really strapped for positions. We have them, they are also completing a piece of the strategic planning on employee handbook and getting good hiring practices across all departments. I myself am not going to support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Jerzyk, Deputy Director Session is here. Would you like a direct question to him?
I have Mr. Haas, I have a question.
Okay. Supervisor Haas.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Go ahead, Supervisor.
Mr. Session, thank you for coming and joining us today. From the perspective of management, what is the advantage to doing this? The management of the HR, the human resources, the employees, the staff, what is the advantage of changing this? It would go from the sheriff's department to the HR. First off, if that is it correct, to go from the sheriff's department to a role in the HR department?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, first of all, Rick Session, Deputy Director of Human Resources. This position, last year, a number of positions were moved back within Central HR. A number of positions within the sheriff's office that were performing HR functions were moved back within the auspices of HR. This position was, there was an oversight, and this position was omitted from that transfer last year. So we were looking to bring it back in-house this year under Central HR, along with all of the other positions. If you look in Org 1140, you'll see that mentioned in the cross charges, that we're bringing all of the positions back with one exception, all of the positions are coming back under HR, so that we have more control over our own staff and that we can move and deploy people as necessary. Now, we don't have any intention of, you know, taking the zoo's HR person away from the zoo or parks HR or even the sheriff's HR person away from the sheriff's office, because those people are subject matter experts. Each department has its own set of needs. In the case of the sheriff's HR manager, we would just like that one back in our shop just so that we're not split across departments so that we have control over HR employees. Does that answer the question, Mr. Supervisor?
Somewhat. Would this have, what advantage would this give the sheriff's department for running their operations?
I'm sorry?
What advantage would this give to the sheriff's department for running their operations?
To leave this position within the sheriff's office?
No, to remove it from the sheriff's.
Well, in the budget, we would be transferring the position to HR.
Correct.
The amendment is to deny that transfer.
Correct.
So,
and if the position were moved to HR,
yes.
What advantage would that give? Well, you're from the HR department, so I might not want to ask you what advantage it would give the sheriff's department.
Right.
I'm trying to disprove,
answer that.
Almost trying to disprove a negative.
Cheryl, supervisor, again, to totally centralize this, and Mr. Session well put it, they can direct their employees to do as they direct their employees to do. I appreciate that he is stating he believes that our current director, whether it's our current director or someone else is placed in our facility, don't know. Whether they'll be full-time, part-time, don't know. Therefore, again, there were several positions that have already been moved to HR. That is certainly a correct statement. To keep us making sure we have accountability over our human resource person, again, that puts us at an advantage to make sure we get done what needs to get done. The sheriff's office, again, of course, we work cooperatively with HR. This is by no means a slight on the human resource director or the deputy director, but we would like to have accountability over one person that's in charge of hiring and maintaining our close to 1,300 employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Inspector. Mr. Session, from HR department's perspective, what is the advantage of the budget proposal? The proposal within the budget, which we transfer this person from sheriff's to HR?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, there's the control aspect that we would have more control over our own functional employees for HR purposes. If you just look at it more under the idea of what do you want to allow, you know, we have 50-some positions that we control on a day-to-day basis. Having one out there that we have no control over that is administering HR policies, that's a source of concern for us. We would prefer to have it in our house.
Supervisor Haas? Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, you know, again, the history, I think HR has been challenged, as was mentioned. And a year ago, we had major proposals to give a lot more responsibility to HR. We had changing of the guard and new director coming in, one left, and it wasn't, I don't think it was time to make those kinds of changes. Now we've had some time period here, and I guess the question, I have one question in my last comment. The sheriff would be the only department, is that correct statement? The sheriff would be the only department to have their own HR person. You centralize the rest of the other departments and brought them back into HR. Is that correct statement?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the courts retains their HR manager as well.
Didn't we vote on that also, though?
Vote on that in last year's budget?
Yes.
Last year's budget?
Yeah, it could be that same kind of conversation we're having today, I think. Is that correct?
You did reject the transfer of the human resources manager in courts last year.
So I guess here, is, as usual, it's a policy decision that we have to make in with respect to both departments. And the point is now, do we have more confidence in our HR department? Now, we put significant new positions in the HR, and we're saying they have a lot on their plate. So I think what we have to decide is, Are we confident, or is it essential that HR get everything centralized? Do we have the confidence now in the department that they should have everything together? Conceptually, I certainly would argue they probably should have everything together. And I guess, is the sheriff's department different? Is courts different? You know, we make these public safety comments, and I guess, you know, I've made up my mind. I guess everybody can think about that. Thank you.
Mr. Session?
Mr. Chairman, just one further point. You know, recall at the end of last year, there were a number of position actions that were necessary in the sheriff's office. We didn't have control over the HR person in that department to give them direction on how to proceed with that, and that person was taking direction from the sheriff directly, and if you recall, we did end up in a situation where the policies that were adopted in the budget were not enforced by the sheriff's office.
Thank you, Mr. Session. We have a motion for... No, we have no... Do we have a motion for... Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a few questions on this issue. First, I'm curious, when we talk about moving an HR manager from one department to another, are we only talking about line of reporting of who is their boss, who has the power to hire them, fire them, give them a review, et cetera, and give them their direction of their work duties for the day? Or are we also talking about physically moving that person out of the location of the sheriff's department so they're not there for the employees in that department?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, we're talking about a line of reporting. Primarily, we have field staff deployed out at departments, physically located at departments throughout the county. We have a person at the zoo, we have people at city campus, we have people at BHD, and we have this person at the sheriff's office, physically located, I believe, in the safety building. So that would remain. Those people are valuable on site, and we wouldn't mess with them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My next question is, if I'm understanding correctly, this human resources manager is in the sheriff's department, and there's other personnel from human resources that are under the scope of HR right now. But when I hear human resources manager, I'm usually thinking of, you know, the top person at the top of that pyramid with other, you know, HR generalists and so forth beneath them. Can someone please explain what the current relationship is? I understand they're in different departments, but what's the functional relationship on a day-to-day basis of that HR manager if they're currently in the sheriff's department versus these employees that I would suspect would normally report to that position? And how are they working together today? Is there something functionally wrong with that aspect of it?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I think by and large the functional aspect is okay, with the notable exception from last year. They're HR professionals. They work together toward a common purpose. So we've been comfortable with that. We just would like to have our position back under our control.
And, Mr. Chairman, if the position were moved back to HR, does that mean that there are other positions that would, again, begin reporting to this HR manager?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, there might be a more of a direct line, and in terms of management and daily oversight, you might see more of a direct relationship there. But I don't think the relationship would be significantly altered. But it would probably be in the best interest of HR to have it all together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Horst, and then we'll vote on this.
Thank you, Chairman. Supervisors, just from a county executive perspective, the reason we suggest this again this year is there wasn't an affirmative vote to last year to give the sheriff this position. It was an oversight in the DAS transfer that did not include that. There was a policy directive for the court's position, just to make sure that this isn't a second vote on the same position. And when we put it in the budget this year, it was a direct result of both the action that we faced in January when having to deal with transfers, as well as the day-to-day support everyday employees in the Sheriff's Department should receive, and having a line between the management and the HR of their direct oversight, and making sure that the employees can approach the HR representative in the department and feel like they're protected and have a voice that's outside of their direct supervisor.
Inspector Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I don't want to belabor this, but being that the issue is just
was made known several times now in testimony regarding the sheriff and the individuals that were laid off. If things would have moved as originally thought to be done of 62 potential layoffs, then there was argument as to how many actual deputies should be laid off and so forth. If that would have been moved prematurely, there would have been multiple deputies that would have been laid off inappropriately based on the sheriff making sure we had the appropriate number from Central HR before that was proceeded. That number then came down all the way to 48 from where it was, thus preventing inappropriate layoffs. So I understand it. We do work together closely with Central HR. There is no animosity between the two groups. It's simply a matter of accountability for a law enforcement agency to maintain one HR person. Thank you.
After Supervisor Weishaupt, we will have a vote. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could someone explain the relationship with this human resources position and the hiring of medical personnel and the recruitment process of medical personnel out at the House of Correction and the medical mental health issues out there?
That would be another subject, sir. We have an amendment regarding
Mr. Chairman, the
Mr. Session, can you answer?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we have most of the medical positions are non-competitive. We have somebody that processes the non-competitive applications for those positions, and we advance those over to the sheriff's office. I believe the sheriff's office does the direct hiring on those.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
On approval, Supervisors Haas.
Aye.
Schmidt.
No.
Fomo West.
Aye.
Jerzyk.
No.
Lipscomb.
No.
Alexander.
Aye.
Stamper.
No.
Cullen.
No.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Motion, the amendment fails on a vote of 4-5. We are now on Amendment 18017 by Supervisor Lipscomb.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask that the amendment be reflect co-sponsorship of Supervisor Mitrievic and West. And if anyone else, I would ask that Supervisor Dmitrievic and West be reflected as co-sponsors, along with Supervisor Stamper. If anyone else asked and I forgot about it, please let me know. Oh, Supervisor Harris, too. That's Harris, West, Stamper, Dmitrievic to be added as co-sponsors.
And Bowen.
And Bowen. Going once, going twice. Mr. Chairman, the amendment for us is to restore staffing for inmate medical and mental health. And it goes a little beyond that, in that it also provides additional resource. It funds a position currently unfunded, that of program administrator, as well as the salary increase in medical director and mental health director, and provides an additional $200,000 in an allocated contingency account to offset the additional expenses associated with recruiting qualified medical personnel to fill the currently vacant positions that we've had such trouble with. It also funds the EMR, cash finances the EMR, capital project, an important component that, you know, I guess my own editorial, Mr. Chairman, would be that the privatization has been sold to us as including a free EMR. And as I've said before, if you don't believe in a free lunch, then you can't believe in a free multi-million dollar EMR. To get into a scenario where you're dependent on an EMR provided by a single vendor, I think puts you in a strategic position going forward where you're unable to fluidly move out of that contract, and I think you're in a very bad position in terms of future costs that and how you're going to end up paying for this in the long run. So I believe this is a more honest approach in terms of funding that EMR with cash, and also providing the sheriff with the necessary additional resources to take on a more aggressive endeavor to fill those positions. I appreciate the support.
Did you move approval, sir?
I do move approval. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Jurczyk.
I just want to say that I agree in concept with what's going on here. I continue to be very unhappy with the cooperation or lack thereof between the sheriff's department and the behavioral health department. I don't think we were completely given very good information regarding that initiative that was in last year's budget. But I know we have the pension obligation bonds before us tomorrow in finance, I don't know if that is in any way going to impact what we hear in finance, but if I could just have a little better understanding of the pension obligation bond debt service and how that's being used to fund part of this. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I defer to staff who helped me craft that. I can only rudimentarily give an explanation that was the shift the executive made in terms of the PLB stabilization. He shifted it into these two areas, and this reallocates it.
Mr. Chairman, supervisors, the issue that you have is that the county executive in his recommended budget included $2,537,150. That was in addition to the anticipated debt service on the pension obligation bonds, so that you could pursue a more aggressive pay down of the POB debt that is going to be refinanced between basically this year and December of 2013. The monies were included in two separate accounts. They were included in debt service, which had $895,000 of them out, and the other $1.6 million was included in Org 1950, which is where the pension obligation bond payment is located. For the purposes of this amendment, $2 million is redirected to cash finance a new capital improvement project for the EMR. That estimate was provided by IMSD staff. One of the things you'll notice in the table is when you unwind some of those dollars out of 1950, because of the fact that they've been included in a fringe benefit allocation, there's some revenue offsets. So you lose the revenue when you unwind it, basically. And I think you've seen it on health care amendments before when it's included in the fringe benefits. There is a revenue component to all of that.
Thank you.
So we're basically taking there was going to be some cash financing of advance payment of debt. And I guess my other question was, is this changing anything that we're doing tomorrow in terms of... I know there's special names for it, but basically we're going to reissue debt and pay off the current debt early as a way of trying to get some more favorable terms, my understanding of it.
Correct. Supervisor, during your regular finance meeting, you'll be contemplating the authorizing the comptroller to go out to the market when appropriate to refinance that $135 million in pension obligation bonds that will be due next December. By allowing the comptroller to have that authority, you would be giving to him the authority to pull the trigger, if you will, when the interest rates are the most opportune, but understanding he would love to wait until the actual debt is due next December. But, of course, if interest rates rise, it's in your best interest to pull the trigger now and refinance and deal with a negative arbitrage rate. A second issue that's kind of tied up into that is what will be the debt service schedule for that $135 million when you refinance that? Do you want to pay it down according to the debt service plans that you had when you initially did it in 2009? Or would you like to try and make a more aggressive debt service payments in order to pay off the debt earlier, which in the long run would have less interest costs? And that's an issue that you have. Keep in mind, however, that the POB debt that you will be reissuing, this $135 million, will already be at significantly lower interest rates than you ever anticipated back when you did this, when you thought you were going to be refinancing in 2013. So there's two policy issues intertwined here.
Are we taking cash, basically paying some down, and then with regard to what we're doing tomorrow, in effect, reissuing fewer bonding for, and I'm probably saying it terribly because this isn't my field, but that's conceptually what I'm thinking, as opposed to with regard to Supervisor Lipscomb, we're going to, instead of doing that, use the money for the electronic, inmate medical and mental health, and then just instead take the full bonding and reissue it. Am I correct, basically?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, yes. I mean, I believe that is the intent here, is that instead of having those dollars available to prepay and pay down the amount of monies that you would be refinancing, you would be able to use that to cash finance this capital project, which I'm not sure how much of it would have been bondable in either case, but that would be moot because you wouldn't be bonding, you would be paying cash for this component.
Thank you. I think I got the picture, and I will support this.
Thank you. Supervisor Smith and Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts there, and I appreciate the complexity of this and talk to people about that, too. The scary thing is I think I understand that a little bit after a few years in this. But, you know, we've come a heck of a long way, and I really need to take credit for what our staff has done. We had many ideas about refinancing the pension obligation bonds we needed to do. There's no way we could sustain and do this on our own and budget for it. We had a bond for it. And we waited a few years. We knocked down some plans that the previous county executive had, and this is a much better plan. The stabilization fund wasn't part of the initial thinking, so we've come a long way. We need to take advantage of these situations and help us in other areas here, which we're doing. So I like that concept. The concern I have, and you know, I don't think anybody liked the fact that it was very disturbing. I said this publicly when this came before a few months ago, that we couldn't get the sheriff and behavioral health, our health and human services department, to come together, broke off negotiations, and there was only one bidder. I mean, I know the sheriff, he stated this publicly, it doesn't want to handle the medical and mental health. I mean, he's there to enforce the rules and run the jail. Okay, fine. So, but we have all our nurses, we have all the professional people, those tough jobs in there, and they've held the fort for us under trying circumstances. I think most of us appreciate that, okay? But here's the concern I have, understanding all those things. Didn't like it. You know, what is our alternative? Well, we find an alternative here, I guess, which I'm looking for a way out of this to keep what we have and to relieve that from the sheriff. Didn't like it was just one bidder, but here's the problem. I don't think that's answered in this, and I would like maybe a staff or we could look at this, or even the maker of the motion here. I'm concerned, more than concerned, about the timeline here. I don't see a timeline. You know, we've been told by everyone that, you know, it's months ago we should have had the three major positions filled. This is a more than a minor concern, to say the least. I have to overemphasize that, the medical director, the head psychiatrist, and the medical administrator. Now, I had a lead just for Dr. Shansky, talked to a number of people yesterday, and I asked this question for months in a row in judiciary. We did, okay. When are these positions going to be filled? Well, we can't fill them. We don't have enough money. Well, you know, or else money was no object. I just can't believe that we could spend months, and months and never get anyone. Now, Dr. Shansky, you know, negated some of the. I remember those comments too. So, the legitimate question here is, so I like the intent, the concept, what we talked about. You know, we're put in a terrible position if we don't do anything here and just say, well, armor somehow is going to solve all our problems. Okay, but what about the timeline? What about, you know, putting more money? You know, who else is going to find this one? Is what I'm saying. Okay, armor said they could bring those positions in. Now, I like to see armor pre-fill those positions. You know, and of course they're not going to be happy. They don't want to fill the positions and not get the contract. I guess I understand that too. Okay, but you know, I don't think the great majority of the board, maybe even myself, you know, is believing that armor is going to solve our problems. Okay, and neglect all the testimony we've had from the veterans and nurses, particularly who've been there in the trenches. And everything is up for grabs then when armor comes in. I need to hear some kind of confidence how this changes. I'm sorry, I'm a little tired of hearing the excuse that nobody can find any of these people. I mean, come on. Okay, and especially when we're saying we're opening our checkbooks up, which we needed to do in this amendment, and that's why I applaud going to the POBs, which really can be used, and in 1950 the fringe benefit too. We need to do those things. We need to take advantage of these kind of ideas to help us out in the situation. So, I know I'm talking around, but this is a very difficult issue, and I want to hear from someone, administration or someone else, okay, that these positions can be filled, that we're working together to do something, especially if we're going to go out on the limb, as far as I'm concerned as a finance committee, take all these other monies that can be used in different parts, okay, and put it towards this, but it's important enough to do it. So, could someone please help me out with this? Thank you.
Is there anyone that can help Supervisor Schmidt, Mr. Horst? Or Inspector Schmidt?
Good afternoon, Chairman Supervisor. I'm not sure I can address all of that because obviously some of it is outside of our control. But our decision to place armor contract in the budget was hard. And we did it because we weighed both the concerns of the employees as well as how inmates are being treated. And in the end, we believed that the improved service that inmates could receive by a national organization that has to prove its accreditation standard within a year was better than rolling the dice again this year, especially after the attempt last year to move forward and have DHHS take this over wasn't fruitful. The sheriff has testified he's not a medical expert, and we don't believe he is either. And we really want the best outcomes for our inmates and to make sure that the county isn't liable for terrible things that can happen. And that's the camp we ended up in. It's a difficult choice either way. This is the one we chose to go with.
Thank you. Inspector Schmidt, can you help Supervisor Inspector Schmidt? Can you help Supervisor Schmidt?
Mr. Chairman, indeed I can. And with me at the table, card was filled out, is Ken Flumble from Armor to answer any additional questions and provide testimonies necessary. First of all, I sincerely want to thank the board. I know this has been an extremely tough budget, and the things that were done today are well appreciated. They don't go unnoticed from the chairwoman on down through all of the supervisors. You did do some wonderful things for the organization today, and on behalf of the sheriff, definitely a thank you is due, which I'm providing. On this particular subject, Ms. Kohlhorst has definitely already outlined some of the issues which we're in total agreement with to help the issue as far as hiring, testimony as far as who's going to hire them, how are we going to get them hired. I don't know. We looked to Central HR to attempt to fill those positions. They've not been able to provide the names. It's not a diss on Central HR, but it's there's been nothing that has come forth of substantial that we can even look at. The couple of people, as you already mentioned, that have come forth, there's been sanctions that were on their licenses, or Dr. Shansky himself refused to hire them. I don't know what to do if this remains status quo. Therefore, the only feasible plan that I've been able to come up with, the sheriff's office has been able to come up with, is to contract out, to outsource this armor. And we've been going through this since 2004, that we've been putting out RFPs. This is the third RFP we've put out. Armor is the only company that came in at a proper fiscal amount, which is reasonable to the county. Everyone else was literally millions of dollars more. How are they able to do that? I don't know. Maybe they're just not as profit hungry as some of the other companies. I don't know the answer. But they've come in, they provided a reasonable plan, they provided reasonable staffing. I am, I guess, sitting on the corner of outrage at what Dr. Shansky did this past week. I sent everyone the staffing plan that's hearing my voice right now as far as supervisors go. It was the staffing plan that he said to use, and then I am more than aware, and I had one of my officers call Dr. Shansky and ask him why he pulled back on the plan, which is the one that he sent you. He basically gave three excuses. Well, I haven't fulfilled my contract in 3 years, and therefore I wasn't really sure about what the numbers were. So he's in contempt of his own contract. Secondly, he stated that, well, I wasn't really sure what the inmate population was. He's been in our facility multiple times this year. He's met with our people. How could he not know that? Third issue is then he stated to his plan, well, you know, I guess it was just hypothetical numbers. That's outrageous. Certainly accountability in the immediate future is necessary, and that's no one's fault on the board. That's simply the individual that was placed over us as the medical monitor. How can we get these individuals hired? I would like to just, and I know it's getting late, but very briefly let Mr. Palumbo from Armor give you exactly how they can do this. They have, and the other two things, which I think are extremely important at this point, Armor has had the facility of the year. They've gotten their facilities NCCHC accredited. That's what this major issue is when it comes to the consent decree. They've done it. I'll close my comment with this. In the county exec's budget, it states that there will be January, February, and March to work out the details with Dr. Shansky and with the county board to get a contract that is amenable to both groups. We totally would support that. So at a minimum, what I would ask is that this particular issue be denied, at least at the present, allow that process to take place to make sure that if it ends up being the status quo, at least let us make the effort to move forward and attempt to make sure either armor is going to work, or if it's at the board's pleasure, status quo is going to work. Right now we don't have an assurance that status quo is going to move forward and meet the consent decree. Thank you.
Mr. Palumbo, please, and then Supervisor Lipson.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, appreciate the opportunity. Three things that I heard. I heard EMR, I heard accreditation, and I heard hiring. Hiring, first of all, healthcare is all we do. We have recruiters who recruit on a national basis, on an ongoing basis, because we are fortunate enough to have growth in our company. So filling the positions is something that we do on a daily basis, and so that's not a major concern of ours. And we have had, because this has been going on for a while, we've had candidates and then they've gone on to other things because of the time frame. But we'll be able to fill the positions. We have licensed physicians in the state of Wisconsin already working for us in other locations. So the positions are not going to be an issue. As I said last week in the Judiciary Committee, we try and retain as many of the current staff as possible. That's our goal. We don't bring people in from out of state. We try and utilize the staff when we assume a responsibility. So the staff that's here, to the greatest extent, remain employed as healthcare professionals at the facilities. second thing was EMR that I heard back and forth. And I appreciate the concern you have, Supervisor Lipscomb. I think those are legitimate. Let me just clarify a few things. The EMR is not free. It's included in our price, but it's not free. It's not our product. And there's a reason we did that. I thought about developing our own product, and I thought I had the exact concern that you had, was that, you know, if we develop our own product, put it in a client's site, and then for some reason the client's not happy with us, and let me just point out, we've never lost a client in a competitive bid, and I'd encourage you to talk to all of our clients, because we've been through this process of privatizing before, and I understand and appreciate the real concerns that you all face. But we decided not to develop our own EMR because of the perception, or possibly the reality, if we were not very nice people, of trying to hold that EMR over the client's head if they wanted to get rid of us. So we went out and evaluated all the EMRs on the market. And I entered into a deal with a company that we thought offered the best product for the best price that was specifically designed for corrections, because it's a unique setting and is different than an office, a doctor's office. And so we didn't want to try and fit a doctor's office EMR into a corrections setting, because it just doesn't work. We found a company, we negotiated a contract, and in that contract I specifically required them to allow the client to continue to utilize that EMR at the favorable rates that we negotiated, because we take care of almost 40,000 patients. So you get the benefit of that as long as you want to keep it. So if you kick us out of here, you can continue to use that EMR indefinitely at the rate that we've negotiated, or you can try and negotiate a better rate, but because of the volume that we have, we think we have a pretty good rate. And so the EMR will never be held over your head, but that is a critical component. And it's not free. That's built into the price that we submitted. So there's no additional cost, but that's in the price that we submitted. The third thing was accreditation. Last week I spoke at the Judiciary Committee, and I appreciated that opportunity. And again, this is all we do. This is how I support my family, and this is how 2,000 of my teammates support their family. We take our work very serious, and I appreciate the comment that I believe Supervisor Schmidt said, that it's a tough job. It's an environment that can be challenging, and a lot of the community may not appreciate what our employees do, and so I appreciate that comment, because they are very dedicated employees, and they work hard. We have a high number, and it's continuing to grow, of CCHP certified employees, which is a certification from the main accrediting body in our industry, which is NCCA, the National Commission on Correctional Healthcare. We did win Facility of the Year. Out of all the jails in the country, we did win Program of the Year out of all the jails in the country. So we take what we do serious, and we believe, we know that that's the kind of service that you would receive if you hired us here. But we concerns that you're struggling with and trying to privatize, or considering privatizing.
Thank you, Mr. Palomo. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to respond to a couple things. I want to make it very clear that the proposal in front of us is not a status quo proposal. I don't want a status quo. I don't want us to just continue along the same path. I've heard the concerns. I've heard the challenges. And I think largely what we have is a question of will and dedication to get the job done, as well as resources. I can't deal with the will and dedication issue, but I have confidence in the sheriff and his team that you can do this if you're given resources. So we provide you the resources. But I don't want anyone to characterize this as status quo. This is designed to help you get past the impediments you've had. And I have confidence that with some resources, you can recruit. Because I don't think there's anything magical about what a vendor can do for you. If a vendor can recruit people to come work in your facility, you can recruit people to come work in your facility. And it needs to get done. And I want to help you. And that's what this is. It's providing you additional resources. As to the EMR, obviously, I respectfully just have some difference of opinion in terms of what I believe we get from a vendor system. Even if it's a third-party system, we're still locked into someone else's system and someone else's pricing structure, yours, which you've negotiated. That's great that we'd get whatever pricing favorable, hopefully, that you've got. But It does not resolve the fact that it's not assured. Well, we're still locked into that proprietary system, and it's not designed to interface with ours. This should be designed from day one to interface with the mental health system, as well as the dental services, and all that should be designed to go together. This is, you know, we're in this business, and we need to do it appropriately. So I respectfully, this is not a status quo amendment, and I hope it's not taken that way, because we're providing significant additional resources to overcome all the hurdles that have been raised.
Thank you very much, Supervisor. I have other cards. Candace Owley, if you would come forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be brief. We've had been through this before, earlier committees, judiciary last week. I appreciate the amendment. I'm here to support this amendment. I think it does what needs to be done, which is the money for the EMR. I was very, very pleased to see that. I think that's important. And the additional funds, with the hope, as you say, if the will is there, Supervisor, that we will be able to get these positions filled. I'm kind of sorry Mr. Session left. If it was Central HR that was supposed to be doing it instead of the department, then maybe there was an issue there. I don't know. I also want to just always thank the supervisor for recognizing the very difficult work that our members do in this environment, but it would be a tragedy to reward them for their difficult work by eliminating their jobs. And I think for those of you that are not on judiciary, I would just point out that in spite of this offer to hire them, you should know that I have checked the seniority standing, and because of the challenges at the Mental Health Center, when I compare the seniority standings, virtually 100% of the nurses currently in the jail, even though some of them have only been there a year or so, would be able to bump into the Mental Health Center, because we have about close to 30 nurses that have been hired within the last year at the Mental Health Center, and even right now the nurses that we can hire are basically new graduates. And so that would be a kind of a massive displacement, because I am relatively sure that many of them would want to maintain their county employment. Certainly anybody with some years of service would want to stay in the county pension system. I don't take great comfort in the idea that they would all stay and work there. So both you'd have significant disruption of the care system within the correctional system, but also in the mental health system. So I would urge all of the committee, of course, and all of the members of the county board to support this amendment, which I think is done a very good job of both restoring the program, but as Supervisor Lipscomb said, it is not just status quo. It puts in the money for the electronic medical records, and it puts in extra compensation for the positions that have been a challenge to hire. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Barbara Beckert.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson and Supervisors. My name is Barbara Beckert. I'm Director of the Milwaukee Office of Disability Rights Wisconsin, and also here on behalf of the Milwaukee Mental Health Task Force. I think this is one of the most challenging issues that you as supervisors are having to look at in this budget, and I know there are a lot of them, and that there are really no easy answers. Our office continues to get calls from people with mental illness and other disabilities who are at the jail and the House of Correction and whose rights to medical care are being violated every day. Data provided by the Sheriff's Office indicates that approximately 50% of inmates are screened as having medical or mental health issues requiring additional assessment and potential treatment, and far too often that is not being provided. Not only is that a concern for these individuals and their families, but it's a legal liability that you should be very concerned about, and I know you are, as policymakers. I don't think there are any easy answers here. As an advocate, I am neither for or against privatization. What I am supportive of is having adequate staffing and quality service that these individuals are legally required to. I do have serious concerns about the Armour proposal based on the assessment that Dr. Shansky did as a medical monitor. I wish that he were here because it's very difficult where we're in the situation where he said, she said, and we're hearing different people quoting him. I want to thank the many supervisors who did take the time to meet with him last week and heard his concern that this proposal is not adequate. You know, some of what he indicated is that based on the consent decree, that called for 50 nurses. Now, since the population currently is lower at the jail and House of Corrections than it was at the time of the consent decree, he recognized that and said that 50 nurses would no longer be needed and that he was in agreement with going with a smaller number, and he had suggested as a test 34 or 36 RNs to see if that were adequate. Now, it's my understanding that this proposal only has 26 RNs and that he felt strongly that this was completely inadequate. The other area that caused concern to me is the proposal that we saw last year from Armour had LPNs doing duties that only RNs are allowed to do in Wisconsin. This just seemed to me like this was not good practice and that it wasn't showing a respect for what the law in Wisconsin is as far as the rules and responsibilities as healthcare professionals. So, you know, as I said, although I'm open to whatever proposal is going to do a better job providing these services because the current system is not working well, I'm not convinced that the proposal that was included in the budget will do so. So I appreciate the amendments that Supervisor Lipscomb and others have brought forward to try and address these concerns, and perhaps these are the best options we have right now, but I still do not feel confident that these are going to address the concerns. I had a lot of hope for the proposal that many of you had worked on last year to have the Department of Health and Human Services clinicians within the county take the leadership role, and I still regret that that did not move forward. You know, the comments that were made about the electronic medical record system, I mean, I think that exemplifies one of the reasons why that would be such a good direction, because we are spending a lot of money and effort to put in place at the Behavioral Health Division a new electronic medical record system. Don't we want the same system to be used in the jail and the House of Correction? Because unfortunately, all too often, the same people cycle between the two systems, and it would be cost effective and it would be better in terms of care to have the same record system used. So thank you for the chance to reflect with you on these concerns. And you know, again, I think this is a very challenging area of the budget, and there aren't any easy solutions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Becker. We have a motion for approval. Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In brief, I think it is very dangerous to have an arbitrary system created at any of our departments that is not compatible with the larger systems that we're trying to set up in our other departments. As Ms. Becker said, we have the system we're currently trying to build at BHD, the record system. Why on earth would we not want to use that where we have other people with needs, such as the Sheriff's Department, the prisoners, they also need mental services? I don't know, for the life of me. People expect that of government, but we should not do that because that, well, anyways, I think this is definitely a very sensible amendment, and I am in support of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've done a lot of nitpicking and research over all the documents related to not just this amendment, but the entire concept. A few weeks ago, I knew that this would be coming before us, and I was intending to support the contract. Then I spoke with Dr. Shansky for the first time in my life, I think on a Friday. We had about a 30-minute phone call, and he brought some things to my attention, and we went over, you know, the FTEs and the charts and the contract, and, you know, I have Dr. Shansky's report and the Armour contract in front of me on the phone with him and now, and I was really disturbed by the fact that the Armour contract currently before us, as attached to the whole issue currently before us, didn't provide the FTEs and the allocation of RNs versus LPNs that Dr. Shansky was verbally live telling me we needed. But at the root of that discrepancy, I had to ask why. Well, you know, why would we have a contract coming in that doesn't meet, you know, everything that's needed to be in compliance with the Christensen decree and so forth? And what I learned from Dr. Shansky's own admission was that there was some oversight, as Inspector Schmidt explained before, that that was rooted in a quote that he had given to the Sheriff's Department. So I just want to make it clear, I don't fault the Sheriff's Department for going out and trying to find a contract that would work, because it seems that they had bad information in the first place. But with that said, I don't know that I can support a contract that we know would likely leave us outside of legal compliance with what's been court ordered, whether it's Dr. Shansky's fault or not, and whether he should continue to be the medical monitor or not is not for us to decide. It's simply an issue of he is the monitor, this is what he's said, and that's that the current contract as proposed isn't something we can comply with. On another topic related to this amendment, going back to the question about the pension obligation bonds, I think to the general public that's kind of a big scary word that not everyone understands what that is. I met with Pam Bryant in detail a few days ago in anticipation of tomorrow's meeting, where this committee will be asked to make decisions about those pension obligation bonds. After she and I had an at-length conversation, I had to recap and summarize and ask her, let me see if I've got this straight. I compared it to a mortgage. I own a house. I have two mortgages on it. I've got my big mortgage and my little one. The little one's called a five-year ARM. It means that after the first 5 years, I've got to go back and refinance it. I said, Pamela, are you telling me we've got the same thing with our pension obligation bonds, where we have a long one like a main mortgage, a small one that has to be renewed? She said, yes. What I need to understand is, in very simple terms that the general public listening and watching can understand, I'm hoping DOS can shed light on what does the proposal in this amendment mean? Would it be possible, if this amendment is passed, to adjust whatever we would be taking up tomorrow in one way or another to move forward without creating any structural holes to be filled next year? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Was that a question, ma'am?
It was.
To Mr. Campbell.
I'll try to answer that question simply. The $895,000 is one-time money within the debt service budget that we proposed to buy down what we would otherwise issue in the pension obligation bond. So the $895,000 we would cash finance that piece of the pension obligation. So what you end up doing is you avoid interest on the $895,000, and because you're putting it into the pension fund, you're earning interest on that $895,000. So in other words, the whole point of a pension obligation bond is to earn interest above your interest cost. So the assumed rate of return in the pension fund is 8%. If you borrow at 4%, you're earning a 4% spread. What this does on that $895,000 is it puts it right into the pension fund, and you earn a straight 8%, because you don't have any interest costs, if you will. So that's why we proposed the $895,000 to be applied in that manner. This has a lot of ongoing costs in terms of the EMR. So to the extent that you're using one-time money and you're plugging into this, it does appear that you have $895,000 of one-time money going into ongoing costs. So in 14 and moving forward, should those costs continue, you now have created yourself a $1.6 million hole for 14, because you're not going to have the $895,000 again in revenue, but you're going to have that expense. So it spreads, it doubles in 2014. So, yes, it does.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit confused because I thought that we were talking in regards to the EMR portion of this amendment to cash, essentially cash finance what would otherwise be a capital investment. We would be purchasing software and the design of it, you know, and so forth. So I understood most of what Mr. Campbell said, but I'm not positive I make the connection between if we go out and buy software or have that software designed for us, how does that create a burden of an ongoing cost?
I mean, if you're saying that $895 is going to be used strictly for the capital component of this, you're aligning one-time costs with the one-time source of funds. So you would be back to square. You know, you wouldn't have that cost in 14 if you're saying you're applying it to. But there is a lot of ongoing things that are also in this amendment. In terms of interest avoided, your cash financing capital. The bonded rate for tax-exempt debt, let's just say, is 4.5%. You know, the pension obligation bond debt would be taxable. Maybe it's a percent higher than that. You know, 5.5%. So you're close in terms of what your interest cost avoided would be versus what your interest cost savings here. So you're kind of net on the proposal.
One moment, Mr. Chairman. I just want to check my notes and see if I had anything else on this for you.
May I quickly address the first half of her question, if possible? Chairman, Supervisors, in the language in the budget, we required that the sheriff meet the National Commission on Correctional Health Care for Jails and be in compliance with the Christensen Consent Decree, or absorb those costs within his budget to do so. So if it ultimately is, if Armour comes back and says the staffing plan isn't sufficient to achieve these results, we've bound him to achieve this result, and he needs to then, within his budget, find the funds to achieve those results. That was the language we included in attempts to address any deficiencies that may or may not come up as staffing plans move forward.
I have planned. I see supervisors on the committee would like to continue the discussion. Supervisor Roma West, Supervisor Jurczyk, and then Inspector Schmidt, and then we're voting. And then Supervisor Schmidt, then we're voting. Supervisor Roma West?
I have just a couple things. The first thing is, in reality, this proposal with Armour should have never made it into this budget. It was the easiest thing to do, and so it's in the budget. It should not have been in the budget last year. It doesn't get us any closer to where we need to be. And so this year, it seemed as if maybe it would, but now we have Dr. Shansky telling us that it's not going to get us there. And so this all should have been hashed out before it got to us. I understand people don't want to put money in the budget. That's fine. But then let's be honest and let's say that. In regards to the emergency medical, the medical records, electronic medical records, we've had this discussion before. It does not make sense for us as Milwaukee County to purchase one system, which we've already done for BHT, and now to purchase a separate system, even if it's through a separate provider. Because in reality, those systems should talk. They should communicate with each other. This, and just to, you know, to put this out there, this is not about the facility. It's great that Armour got facility of the year, but the facility is the one thing that we're actually passing on when it comes to the consent decree. It's the last thing that we need to work on. We're good. It's everything else that goes into it that we have the issues with. And so to bring in somebody else and say, oh, yeah, you know, the facility is great, it already is good. It's everything else that's not. In regards to, you know, to the Armour contract, I think there's serious concerns about that. The other thing is that I think that if this is, you know, in the future, if we're going to bring in outside vendors that are going to be doing health care for us, you know, we need to look at them posting performance bonds. You know, because the reality is that although the county executive's office believes that there is no liability to Milwaukee County because ARMR's in there running this thing, that's absolutely the furthest thing from the truth. Because they're in our facility, they're with our inmates, and if something goes wrong, we are going to, yes, they may be sitting next to us at a table in a courtroom, but guess what? They're not, we're not going to be sitting there alone. We'll be there together. And so, irregardless, and I think this is so important for people to hear, irregardless of who we have running the inmate medical and mental health, the sheriff is ultimately responsible. So whether it's DHHS, whether it's us, whether it's ARMR, whoever it is, the sheriff is ultimately responsible, which means that if something goes wrong and we get sued, which we did in 2000, it's ultimately the sheriff that is being held responsible. And so it doesn't lessen the liability to bring in a private contractor. This contract should have been vetted way better than it was. I'm actually, frankly, irritated for the second year in a row that's in front of us because it shouldn't be. And I know that, you know, this was the cheapest proposal. That doesn't actually help me sleep better at night either. The last thing is that in regards to the positions that need to be filled, I think almost all of us have talked now or will talk in the near future to Dr. Shansky, who has said that he will assist in filling these positions. And so if we have, you know, ready, willing participants who are going to help us, I think that that's definitely help that we need. I think that Supervisor Lipscomb's amendment does a heap to help with our situation here. And I mean, in regards, I'm not saying that privatizing, and I'm against privatizing, because in some cases maybe that's the best thing to do. But I think in this case, we don't even have a handle on what we're doing ourselves. And then to go ahead and hand it off to somebody else, I think that's just, it's a very, very big risk for us to take. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Joseph and Supervisor Schmidt.
I know time's long, and I will be brief, but we're being asked to make a value decision here. And I'm hearing the county exec staff saying that when we're on probation with terms, that's the Christensen consent decree, and we need to meet the terms, it's going to cost us money to do that. And you're worried instead about paying off debt early? I mean, really, that is just almost outrageous. And quite frankly, I've been listening to the Sheriff's Department criticize BHD for lack of cooperation, criticize Dr. Shansky for padding his hours. I checked those statements. Dr. Shansky has no interest in padding his hours. The gentleman would actually like to retire. We've been under the Christensen decree for 12 years. It's a shame in this community. It's a shame. We are the longest. The only other county even close to us is 7 years. So we need to start making some real value decisions here. We need to take care of the Christensen decree. We need to spend whatever money we need to do it, get this taken care of, and stop talking about this early payment of debt as a way of saving money in the county. I'm really not very pleased with the cooperation we're getting from the Sheriff's Department. I've checked some of your statements to us that you've given us during budget, and they have not checked out. We need cooperation, and we need to take care of the Christensen decree, and we need to get Milwaukee County out from under it. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Schmidt.
We've really been over this, and I said a number of comments that engendered others, and so I won't repeat those, of course. The big thing, the final, you know, in trying to, you know, work through the difficulty, we've all talked over that. Two things. That is, a major thing, of course, was bringing in the electronic medical records that was just mentioned. But that was a big part of this. Well, not only can they get us the three people, but they can bring us the records. Now, we talked this to death a little bit, but I think that the point is that we just went through the capital budget. We saw what the expenses were for IMSD, the mainframe with all the things they're doing. Millions of dollars over the next few years, every year. Well, we need to have an interface system. We need, you know, we're going to have to invest this, all these millions of dollars for IMSD. We need to be able to interface. Now, I know BHD is different from the sheriff, but my Lord, so we spend all this, you know, we want to contract out less. I don't want to be, I'm just worried of getting an independent or outside electronic medical records, and then it doesn't interface, and then we've got all these expenses and millions of dollars in capital spending, $10 million over the next couple of years, IMSD, and then yet they're not involved in this whole situation. That I can't, you know, financially get past that. And then, you know, if there's a problem here, the biggest stumbling block all the time has been we're not filling these positions. Well, I mean, we heard a comment I didn't hear before say, well, you know, the centralized human resources has, well, then let's get them involved. And, you know, if they have headhunters that can do it, we can't find someone to find these positions. We can't have HR do this and work with the sheriff. That's been the main stumbling block. Come back month after month after month saying, well, we haven't been able to do it. You know, we got a blank check. Well, we have given them a blank check. We have done these kinds of things. And that's why I just think it's come to head, and we got to move forward and do this. And HR has got to get involved. We got to fill these positions as soon as possible. You know, the excuses are over. Thank you.
Excuse me, Inspector Schmidt, I'll give you a minute, and then we're going to vote.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, 1 minute's more than enough. First of all, the EMR will interface with any other system. Secondly, Ms. Torhorst already basically brought up the issue that I wanted to, that this does demand NCCHC accreditation. It does demand compliance with the consent decree. It does demand that Dr. Shansky approves the contract. It also allowed the first quarter to put those things together and allow the board to approve the contract. Finally, if there's any discrepancies in anything that's been ushered from my mouth or anyone else that's testified on this subject, I'd be more than happy to revisit those issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Horst, we're going to vote. Pardon me. Madam Clerk, would you please
call the roll? Motion is on approval of the amendment. Supervisors Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Rommel West?
Aye.
Gerzit?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Cullen?
Aye.
And Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion approved, 9-0.
Thank you very much. Housekeeping matter on item A, 1A006. Supervisor Borkowski withdrew, but however, Supervisor Rommel West, and we're being prompted by Corporation Counsel Walker, will have to withdraw her motion.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you very much, Supervisor. So the amendment is withdrawn by Supervisor Borkowski. Thank you very much, Supervisor. Next amendment, please.
Next amendment is 1A025 by Supervisor
Weishaupt.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir. Supervisor
Weishaupt. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I'd like to withdraw that, seeing the previous action.
Thank you, Supervisor. Item 1A025 is withdrawn. Next amendment, please.
We are now on 1A014 by Supervisors Jurisic and Broderick.
Supervisor Joseph. On.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Okay, Supervisor Joseph moves approval. Supervisor Harris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I
colleagues to vote against the amendment before you, as I will be putting forward another amendment that will be what I think is better, and hopefully my colleagues will also.
Okay. Supervisor 1A014 is before us. Supervisor, you have moved approval. Committee members, anyone, would a committee member like to say something on this amendment? Offer some information, ask questions. Supervisor Smith.
Yes, thank you. I think this is something we've started to talk about. The county executive did not put in this budget this year. I think for the point being, this needs pretty long and extensive kind of look. We didn't reach this lightly. Again, just quick history. We went back a few years. The House of Correction, now called the Correction Facility South, was in a mess. And we gave it to the sheriff. Now, there's some discrepancy whether he could be doing more in some areas, but I'm not going to, you know, give it a 2 or 3 month. I think it's great to have a work group. I think we should be studying this. I think it's premature to say that in 5 or 6 months we're going to make a change. We're going to put money towards a superintendent. We're going to have just a massive change here. I want to study this for that period, and then I want it in a budget. Do not want to see us make a midstream here, all of a sudden go to a superintendent. You know, government is criticized for moving too slowly. I understand that. But our founding fathers did strongly believe, and I guess I believe too, you can move too quickly. Quick decisions are not wise decisions. That's why we have bicameral systems. That's why we have checks and balances. And I really strongly believe in that. And we need to, you know, when we make major policy decisions, usually we say we go to the standing committee and we wait. I think it's fine to study it. I think there are enough questions to look at it. But to put money in and into, you know, the next, I think Red Luce is talking about, we're going to a superintendent, this is all going to change and everything's going to just be better all of a sudden. I think we need a long study of this. I think it needs to be put in the budget. We've done unbelievable upheavals. We've changed things in the sheriff's budget. We've made some major decisions today that I think the rest of the board will probably carry out. I think that's plenty for 1 year in the sheriff's budget and public safety like we talked about. So, I really think this is premature to make these leaps right away to change things. I'm fine with having a study. I think we all need the realization we need to have a study and look at this. And so let's look at it with all deliberate speed, be judicious, take 6 months or more to look at this, and then let's put it in the budget next year. If we think there are changes should be made, and give everybody a chance to look at this. We're making major decisions in some major areas today already, and funding the sheriff, et cetera, et cetera. This is one other thing we don't need to put on our plate this year and make these kind of decisions, put more monies in. Those would be my points. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern. I like the idea of doing a study, but looking at the fourth underlined paragraph on the amendment, discussing how the superintendent would be expected to evaluate whether or not it would be appropriate to transfer management of CCFS to the superintendent as well. It seems to set up an opportunity for a person possibly with preconceived notions to be hired and then be given the authority to decide that, and essentially place a small amount of responsibility on an executive level position, and once they have that responsibility, say, hey, would you like more? Possibly with the unspoken innuendo that with more responsibility, there's an essence of job security there. So I'm supportive of most of the idea conceptualized in the amendment, but I don't think I can support it with that clause in there and that intent for the superintendent themselves to make the decision if their own job duties are going to be expanded. It's a conflict of interest to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Jerzyk.
well, in response. I mean, the whole point of this amendment is because the sheriff does not want to accept the evidence-based information that that the electronic monitoring, the day program, et cetera, is based on. And we heard the sheriff here. He stated an opinion. He doesn't believe in social engineering, were his words. That was an opinion. The chief judge has spent over 2 years establishing universal screening and attempting to get a program established through evidence-based information and educated this county board on what he was doing. The lack of cooperation with the sheriff is killing these programs. So this is the way, this is the one way this board has. We can have a superintendent oversee this program. Otherwise, the other, only other choice we have is the sheriff. Rather than just jump into a superintendent, I was here when Malone was around. We had all kinds of problems. I'm not ready, as I think many of you have expressed, to just say let's go back to a superintendent model over the jail, or not the jail, the House of Corrections. So all this does, and it's been discussed previously, is to bring in a superintendent for those programs that would permit certain groups to go for the alcohol and drug programs, the GED programs. And by the way, our House of Correction has a population that is there for less than 1 year. We are not running maximum security prisons here. And if you would listen to the language of the sheriff, you would swear we were running a maximum security prison in this county. That is not the kind of folks we keep in Milwaukee County. A lot of these people are fairly young. If they get the opportunity to straighten out with regard to drug and alcohol counseling, with GED classes and so on, we actually could help that population move into a more positive program. Unfortunately, we have a sheriff who has stated he doesn't believe in the program, and that's his opinion. And therefore, we are at loggerheads here. This is an attempt to just get a superintendent initially for that first piece that the sheriff refused to cooperate. And I do not believe it's any conflict of interest for the superintendent to then also review the issue of whether they can take over the House of Correction and bring an opinion to the board who is ultimately the decision maker. That's all that piece is. That piece is there because some of us have actually talked about let's go to the superintendent model. There's some pressure in the community to want to do that. I'm certainly not ready to go that far yet, but I think we need to save these programs that the courts are very interested in to give our young people an opportunity to get to these programs. And since the sheriff refuses to cooperate with this piece, this is a way, really a patch around him. And that's why it's being presented in that way. So I hope my colleagues will understand it from that point of view. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Stamper, then Mr. Horst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Supervisor Joseph. I like the top part, but the additional part with the funding for the superintendent, I think it needs to be thought about or put in a different format. I'm interested in reading the revision of Supervisor Harris's, and then hopefully you guys can come to an agreement. But I don't know if this is a to lay this over. Move to lay over.
I have no objection to that, Mr. Chairman. I know there are two competing issues before us, and if my colleagues have questions on it, I'm more than willing to let them lay this over, explore some additional review of this. I encourage everyone to talk to the chief judge and to the pretrial services director. They can give you good information, as can a lot of the organizations in the community that follow this, such as MICA and the Benedict Center. they all have good information on this. We have got to save these programs, or if we just continue to the sheriff, based on his opinion, to kill these programs, we're going to get nowhere with the youth in this community that are serving out there at the house and could actually be working productively. So thank you.
Thank you.
I have no objection to that layover.
Supervisor Stamper has moved layover. Is this a temporary layover after we hear this other amendment, or is this for next week?
This amendment,
given what Supervisor Jurisic said with respect to having given an opportunity to talk to the Chief Judge and other persons who might be interested in such.
What, why don't you lay it over and give people an opportunity, at least overnight and maybe even till tomorrow? You know, I mean, I hate to put too much next week, but...
Is there any objection to the layover? The amendment is laid over.
Yes.
Hearing none, the amendment is laid over.
I would assume we're going to also lay over here.
Mr. Chairman, just... I got a question.
Yes.
Of either you or maybe staff.
Sure.
This was laid over. Tomorrow we have a fairly full agenda, and the other ones we've laid over at the call of the chair. We've talked about whether they laid us over till tomorrow or next week. What exactly did we just do?
Mr. Cady.
Do we have to take it up tomorrow, or can we take it up next week?
Mr. Cady.
Mr. Chairman, I believe by laying over, you are adopting a budget at the end of tomorrow, going into the public hearing. So, to me, this would have to come up before you adopt the budget tomorrow.
Mr. Reed,
you have another chance to amend that by this committee 2 days after the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, this layover would not be until after the public hearing. It would be up before you adopt the budget tomorrow.
Okay. The layover would be for until tomorrow.
I would be concerned about calling the chair, because I think calling the chair basically means a table.
Tomorrow. It's laid over till tomorrow.
Okay.
If there isn't a supervisor, unless there's an objection for which we will vote, Supervisor Roma West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to encourage you. I like both of these amendments, and I'd just like to encourage my colleagues to possibly get together and see if they can do a hybrid of both of these. I like pieces of both of them. I'm not sure that it's realistic to have a superintendent appointed and begin work on January 1st. And so I think that's a piece of this that I'd like from the Jurisic Broderick amendment. And so I think there's work that can be done to combine this and hopefully make everybody happy. I think the concept is a very good one. I agree with most of what Supervisor Jurisic said in regards to the programming out of the House of Correction. The state of Wisconsin has seen a lot of savings in their correctional budget from moving to community-based model. So it's something that we definitely need to explore. But at the same time, she's absolutely correct. We have 4 people on electronic monitoring in Milwaukee County right now, because you know that's it's a function of the sheriff, and the sheriff at present chooses not to exercise that right. And so instead of John Doe feeding, housing, and clothing himself, the taxpayers in the city of Milwaukee are doing that, and in the county of Milwaukee are doing that. And I'm not sure that that's, something that needs to be taking place. And so I really would like to see the 2 authors get together and come up with a good hybrid.
And actually, Mr. Chair, Supervisor Harrison, I did talk about trying to get some time together, and unfortunately she had to leave over the lunch hour. We didn't accomplish that. So I will certainly talk to Supervisor Harrison. I think she's expressed an interest in talking to me as well.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much. This amendment is laid over until tomorrow. We have now
28023 by
Supervisor
Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am curious. Once an item is laid over, we can't hear from public comments.
Well,
because it's laid over, because we're not talking about an item.
For 1014, since it's laid over, we cannot hear from the public now. That would happen tomorrow.
Okay.
For that
Gotcha.
Although they could speak to Supervisor Harris, as there have been a lot of people who have been waiting here all afternoon, so maybe Supervisor Harris doesn't want to have hers later or quite yet.
Right. Okay. Good.
I have for 1A023. I have cards from Kit
yes.
McNally.
Let's do that.
Jean Gerasi, Nicole Young Todd, Kevin Soups, and Alicia McGee. I have 5 cards at least. Supervisor Harris, would you like to
let the public speak because some people may not be able to be here on other days?
Okay. Would you like to briefly explain your amendment?
Yes.
To those who are listening?
Yes. Basically, maybe I should come there. It's fine.
That's right? Fine. Whatever you come.
All right. So basically, my amendment is calling for a full-time superintendent to run CCFS. Separately from the Sheriff's Department, charging that the county exec's office will appoint a superintendent, and then the superintendent will then proceed with hiring staff to build a solid team around him or her in order to run the House of Corrections appropriately. So basically, I think that's a general overview of what I need to say right now, because initially, I was going to make a motion, and am going to make a motion to lay. But can I do that?
You cannot do that.
All right. So can we please let the public speak?
You can request such, but a committee member would have to do that.
Yeah, you can't make a motion from there.
You are so right. Can I request?
She's a control freak.
That one of my colleagues, after we hear from the public, lay over. The amendment.
I recognize you, ma'am. I recognize you.
You who, me?
Yeah.
You recognize? Okay.
I recognize you. Or someone else will.
Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that, because I need some tweaks to happen to this, and I would like to work with my colleague on helping come up with a good plan that everybody can work with. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much, Supervisor. Kim McNally, if you would come forward, please. This is on Supervisor Harris's amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Supervisors. I hope you will really look seriously at this amendment and moving the House of Correction back under a professional who really knows how to run a correctional facility. We have an evidence-based program that the leadership of the justice system has really put their heart and souls into. It's incredible what has happened to make this system really the very best it can be, as far as using what science knows and what experience shows works from around the country and nation, the world in some cases. The House of Correction is not functioning that way. And the elimination of electronic surveillance, the killing of the day reporting center, and the Huber scattering to the winds are just 3 parts of what's not working that needs to work to make this evidence-based system whole. What goes on down at the House of Correction right now is really not right. Generally, the majority of the population are sleeping. This isn't evidence-based. This isn't preparing anyone to come back to the community. This is risking public safety in the community. And we have the ability to do this different. We have the ability to put a corrections professional in there who will see that evidence-based programming happens in there. Right now, women can work 3rd shift in the kitchen. I can't determine if they get to do anything else down there. This is not right. If you're a woman, you should have access to treatment. You should have access to a GED. You don't. It's discrimination, and the fact that there are fewer numbers is not reason for it not to be happening. There is the ability now to enhance a little bit this planning team that the amendment asked for through our evidence-based connection with the National Institute of Corrections to bring in a corrections professional who knows what works, who knows where the best is happening around the nation, to work with the rest of the people suggested for that planning committee to say, what would we need to do? What kind of superintendent do we need here? What what kind of steps can the county board and the county executive take that will keep us from running into what we ran into before with poor management at the House of Correction? Usually when you have poor management, you look at what's wrong and you put in a manager that's going to fix all of that and do better. Instead, we threw it under law enforcement, which seemed to make sense, except law enforcement is not corrections. And we're seeing the outcome of all of that now with these programs that are falling apart. And when they fall apart, the people fall apart. And when the people fall apart, they reoffend. And so what we're doing is endangering the community. We're adding to the cost of what's going to go into the going to happen in the county system, because people are going to recycle through. And it's the residual effects of all of this include families. It includes people who are dependent on those who we lock up, or those whose jobs are lost because they're pulled off of electronic supervision, or they lose Huber privileges, or they don't make it to the day reporting center. So I very much urge you to look seriously at what comes of this combination of two amendments that really get at the heart of the problem. I think we can't wait a whole year to have a new superintendent and to really return the House of Correction to a correctional facility. But you've got the substance to make this happen. I would very much love to come back tomorrow and say you've got the perfect amendment. Please, please support it. But please do. If you have doubts about doing this or concerns about doing it, do talk to Justice 2000 or Justice Point or the Chief Judge or the District Attorney. I mean, everyone knows what the problems are. I would be happy to give more information from the community side of what I've seen not work and some of the disasters that have come in as a result. So thank you for taking some testimony on this today and for continuing to look at the possibility of doing this really right this session.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jean Gerasi.
Thank you so much, and also just for maneuvering so that the public can be heard. I appreciate that respect for interactive democracy. I'd also like to really thank Supervisors Drisick, Broderick, and Harris for really thoughtful deliberation with the amendments, and I'm looking forward to the idea of something collaborative, just moving into this direction as the proper recognition that we need, that there is a problem that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed urgently. That issue is that currently Milwaukee County is not doing everything that it could be to ensure public safety for its residents because it's failing to fully implement evidence-based programming at CCFS or the House of Corrections, programs that are proven to reduce recidivism. Instead of the evidence-based treatment programs and employment trainings that could be there, programs that national studies and local evidence prove that work, the majority of individuals are instead being warehoused and, as my predecessor stated, spending their days sleeping and, frankly, wasting the opportunity to take real accountability for their lives by being able to address their addictions and build their job skills and prepare for a better future that Supervisor Drisick reminds us begins in just 6 months to a year, not that far into the future. Since 2009, the House of Corrections programming has decreased. The sheriff has been very clear in his position that he does not support evidence-based decision-making efforts. He's even taken steps to undermine those efforts by other parts of the criminal justice system. The only way for Milwaukee County to assure evidence-based decision-making is restored is to recreate the superintendent position. This isn't a decision that needs to be postponed. To go another year without making this decision and taking action is to let an entire set of incarcerated individuals return to the community without the tools they need to be successful. And frankly, that's another year of needlessly risking public health and public safety. So I would ask that we deeply and seriously consider taking action now. I think we already know that a change is needed. It's really about the logistics and the timing of when we implement it. But I think we can make a decision this budget cycle that this change needs to be made. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Nicole Young Todd. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon. I represent Wisconsin Community Services. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. And I very much want to thank Supervisors Harris, Jurisic, and Broderick for bringing this amendment, this much, much needed amendment to the 2013 budget. I'll be brief. I appreciate the spirit, and since I can't speak directly to it, I'll sort of speak to Representative Jurisic's amendment. I appreciate the spirit of the amendment, and I really look forward to an amendment that sort of brings together some of the strengths of both of the amendments. One thing I'll say is that we have been talking about this. We have been deliberating. It's sort of this idea that this is like a rash decision, but there are subcommittees of the Community Justice Council, which was put in place a huge step forward for our county. This is a concept that has existed all over the state of Wisconsin, and we've made a great progress in the last few years in putting this council in place. Its subcommittees include, and WCS is represented on the Jail and Huber Committee, which the Sheriff also sits on through Representative Inspector Schmidt, and the Programs and Interventions Committee, which Supervisor Nelson sits on. So we've been talking about this for a year. And the principles of evidence-based decision-making, irrespective of electronic monitoring in general, for longer than that. And for all that time, if we're suddenly going to expect the sheriff in 2013 to do a reversal, to say, okay, I wanted electronic monitoring in 2008, I didn't want it in 2011 and got rid of it, and now what she said to you, I'll look at it again, that's inconsistent. That's not leadership. And to your point, Supervisor Schmidt, about checks and balances, you're absolutely right. That was actually one of my points. And his check is you. And the people of Milwaukee County, this isn't an emotive comment. We can't wait any longer. I think sometimes also public safety seems sort of abstract, and I wouldn't say that you're treating it that way, because I loved Supervisor Roma West's comments about how it really comes down to this is the most important thing I think you vote on. With the power of the board, you have to, your primary responsibility is to keep us safe before anything else. And it's not abstract when my predecessors talked about, when you think about the victims of people who were not handled properly by Milwaukee County, and that could have been avoided, had those people turned around their lives with help of evidence-based programs, things that work around the country that the sheriff has shunned for the past year to 3 years, depending on what alternative to incarceration you want to look at. You've ordered an audit through the Judiciary Committee to look at alternatives to incarceration. Obviously, you don't get the results of that audit, or I doubt you will, before you take this vote, either tomorrow or next week. But I think there's a spoiler alert. We are not using alternatives to incarceration through the Sheriff's Department as effectively as we owe the people of Milwaukee County. And if you choose to wait another year, that's something that we need to consider. That it's not another year to make a prudent decision. It's a year to make another year to make a decision, and there's really not much more evidence to collect. And this isn't the same as the sheriff in the parks. This isn't the same as the sheriff with the 911 calls. This isn't the same as the Christensen decree. They're all separate issues. So this isn't a decimation of the sheriff's budget. I think Supervisor Borkowski talked about that, and that's fine. This is not a further effort to do that. This is a single, separate issue, and it deserves its own attention. So to that end, I can't be here tomorrow. I have a personal commitment that I can't change. But it's actually based on, and I'll just say this, David Lehman's passing, visiting with his family tomorrow, and people like David Lehman worked their entire careers to make sure we're going forward with our criminal justice system. And in the past 3 years, we've taken huge steps back. So I hope that we can continue forward. And this amendment, a combination, will do that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I have two more, Inspector. Alicia McGee and Kevin Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, Alicia McGee and I would like to withdraw our cards.
Withdraw them?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Inspector Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. I'll be very brief. Sheriff testified at Finance when our original hearing was done that definitely he would review the GPS issue, which was done. I can tell you right now, to meet parameters that keep nonviolent offenders, which we did go through, did a complete analysis of our population, you're looking at less than 50 people that would meet the GPS requirements right now unless those standards were lowered. Excuse me. That's really the main thing I'd like to convey at this point. The 147 inmates that are on Huber go to their places as assigned by the courts. They get out. So there's 147 people that every week go to, whether it's elder care, their place of employment, and so forth. So what is GPS going to gain for you? Well, at least at this point, if we put all 50 or less than 50 individuals out, basically it gets them home detention. It puts them in their home. They can't go anywhere. They're assigned there. If they do leave their home, it puts them right back in jail. So if that is an issue that is a deal closer for the board, then so be it. I will say this on behalf of the sheriff's office: if there is going to be an attempt to bifurcate the system, whether it's give part of the House of Correction to one entity and put GPS on another entity, that's untenable at the sheriff's office. So something to consider tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you need a card?
Yes. We'll get a card from you, Judge. Judge Kremers.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Supervisors. I just listened to Inspector Schmidt, and I can't even believe what I heard. I mean, I have been asking since last March to discuss this with the sheriff with respect to his determination to take close to well over 100 people, close to 150 people off of electronic monitoring, and an explanation for why and what the new rules were. We heard nothing, no cooperation, no meeting, no explanation. It wasn't until a few weeks ago that the sheriff suddenly said, well, the reason I'm doing it is because we don't need it, because the only purpose of electronic monitoring is jail population. We haven't needed electronic monitoring for jail population purposes for several years. You should ask Inspector Schmidt why in 2008, when you all of you agreed to transfer the House of Corrections to the sheriff, Inspector Schmidt authored he was then Deputy Inspector Schmidt, authored a memo to his boss, Inspector Carr, that said we can get 300 people on electronic monitoring if the courts will cooperate with us. So it was like, we need the courts to cooperate with us. That cooperation has been forthcoming from the courts from then, and it continues. For him to sit here and suggest to you that since the sheriff's appearance in front of you a week or so ago, they have been able to evaluate all 2,500 people at the House of Corrections and ascertain who's nonviolent, whatever that definition is, and I'd ask you to ask him, what's your definition of nonviolent? Because I haven't heard that definition from the sheriff, although we've been asking since I heard this statement from the sheriff that he would reevaluate this, as he put it, electronic monitoring thing, that he would reevaluate it. We've been asking. I heard the other day that the people at the day reporting center were all being subjected to being retested for LSIR, despite the fact that all of them are tested before they get there, or when they first walk in the door by attic. I called, I think her title is Deputy Inspector Burmeister, who runs the Franklin facility. I talked to her 2 days ago, or maybe it was yesterday. I'm losing track of the days. I said, are you doing an LSIR? Are you re-LSIRing people? Not that I know of, was her response. I'll check on it and get back to you. As of 4:25 this afternoon, I've not heard any confirmation that they're retesting people. So without doing that, without telling us what their definition of violent offender is, I have no way of knowing what the basis for that sort of veiled threat to you, I guess, that this only involves 50 people. And with respect to the comment about if you bifurcate these, the sheriff won't cooperate, I'm not sure, with all respect, that's the sheriff's call. Isn't that your responsibility to decide who cooperates with who with respect to running your facilities that you're responsible for? Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Supervisor Cullen?
I would move that we lay this item over till tomorrow.
Is there any objection? Then Amendment 1A023.
Oh, Mr.
Chairman? Supervisor Haas.
That's right. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to take a moment to recognize and remember Assistant District Attorney David Lerman, who died about 3 days ago. He was a big supporter of restorative justice here in the county and has done incredible work that has touched many, many, many people.
And I would concur with that. I know Mr. Lerman, and he was very dedicated to restorative justice efforts, and he will be greatly missed. His family misses him, and those who knew him in the Milwaukee County community will greatly miss him. Take a moment, have a moment of silence to recognize his passing, please. Thank you, Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr.
Amendment 1A023 is laid over till tomorrow. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is so ordered.
The last item is Amendment 1A026. Supervisor
Alexander. Supervisor Alexander has moved approval of Amendment 1A026. Proceed, please.
This amendment would deny the increase of marriage license and domestic partnership fees from $105 to $110 per license. It seems like a small amount. It all adds up to almost $9,000. I am proposing that we use tax levy for that and actually receive Supervisor Borkowski's blessing on this, if anyone can believe that. In our budget hearings last week and the analysis that we have received, we were told that this proposed increase was not actually going to pay any increased costs of having marriage licenses, but it was going to pay the increased costs of this county board putting forth new ordinance changes. So first of all, the fee increases, it's not just going to, you know, people having to get married and get a license. It's going to something that we're actually instigating, if you will, because we change the ordinances often. Second, the argument brought to us for this fee increase included the argument that the cost of weddings is high. We all know that it's expensive to have a wedding, and so that makes it reasonable to be able to charge a higher fee. But I would say that almost everyone in this room knows at least someone who's gotten engaged, planned to get married, and said, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm going to pay for all this. Well, we would be tacking on just another fee for them to do that. Third,
Alexander has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Third, being part of a home where two parents are married or two parents are the family structure offers the most stability for our youth, and the poor who desire to get married or establish a civil partnership would be disproportionately affected by this. And the majority of my district, as well as a large portion of Milwaukee County, are persons of color. 50 years ago, black persons were the most married of all races in the U.S., and today, black American women are not only the least partnered women in the U.S., but the entire world. So with that, I continue my request to move approval on denying the county executive's intention to raise the marriage license fee.
Supervisor Roman West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think I'm the person at the table who most recently bought a marriage permit and a marriage license. And I was expecting that the increase was going to happen because we were all warned last year that basically what the county clerk is trying to do is to align Milwaukee County with the rest of the state. And so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just something that he willy-nilly did. It's, you know, Gaines County is more expensive than us. I think everybody in the state is more expensive than us. Not that anybody wants to pay more money for your marriage license, but it's the cost of getting married. And, you know, there are people who come here and they get their marriage license and then they go to the courtroom and, you know, they get married and that is their wedding. And so it is a very small amount, but yet when you're looking at it in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's $8,000. And so I'm not sure where I sit on this, but I just wanted to kind of give the context and the history in that last year we raised it a little bit. And when we did that, the county clerk told us that this year he would also raise it a little bit because he could have raised it the entire amount last year to bring us up with the rest of the state. He didn't do that. And so having said that, we will expect that next year there will not be an increase in marriage license fees, and whether it be $5 or $10. But I appreciate the... You know, the demographics given, the statistics, but I'm not sure that raising marriage license by $5 is going to make somebody change their mind about getting married. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The effect of the amendment would increase tax levy by $8,925, and we remove the language for the increasing of marriage license and domestic partner fees and revenues. Supervisor Cullen?
Well, I don't want to spend a lot of time on a $9,000 amendment either, but it does seem to me that a lot of the people who would, you know, not want to do this are the same people that always talk about, you know, fee for service. So yep. I'd rather have the person who's getting a license pay the $5, and I've been married 23 years, so I believe in the institution of marriage. And not add this onto the tax levy. I think this is a reasonable amount. The county clerk apparently warned the board about last year that it was coming. I wasn't here, but I'll accept his warning. And you know, I'm not going to support this amendment.
Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll
on the approval of the amendment? Supervisor Haas?
No.
Schmidt?
No.
On the left?
No.
Jersey?
No.
Lipscomb?
No.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Cullen?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion fails. Amendment fails by a vote of 3-6.
Thank you very much. Is there any other business in front of us? No. This meeting is now adjourned.
Congratulations.
And go to class.
Yes, sir.